we have the new, I guess, display when you want to speak. So when you want to speak, you push that little red button on the right-hand side of your microphone stand there, and you'll see it comes on, the light comes on, and then... Oh, I've got it all here.
Yes, that's true.
Anyway, it shows up on the little monitor here. And it also times you. You know how it's a 5 minutes per time and to the same item only twice, so total of 10 minutes. So the timing and everything is here. I will be very strict also on our, public question period. We changed that so it could be more efficient, and I've let it go a little bit. So I will be telling the public at public question period from now on that it is questions on the agenda, from the agenda. It's not speeches, and if they start speeches, I will just cut them off. Okay? Councillor Beffert?
Can I just ask if we want to cancel, if our points are being made, you just push it again?
Yeah, push the button now. Okay, so you've come up here. Say you want to take your name off. Push it again. It's gone. Okay? Good. Okay. So, Councillor DeBoer, would you please say the prayer?
Help us this day, O God, to turn with patience the race that is set before us. May neither opposition without nor discouragement within divert us from our goal. Inspire us in both strength of means, steadfastness of purpose, that we may meet all fears and difficulties with unswerving courage and may fulfill with quiet fidelity the tasks committed to our charge through Jesus Christ our Lord.
Tell you we missed you last week, Carrie. Okay. Is there any disclosure of pecuniary interest? Seeing none, you have the summary of addendum items before you. Okay, I guess we will go right into Mr. Wong's presentation. If you need a few more minutes, I can jump into something else. No? Okay.
Good morning. I'm here to talk about RB3, and my presentation is really just going over the report, because there's some important components of the report that I wish to highlight for council. Basically, on December 3rd, so the first part of the report is talking about $182,700 of capital to be reallocated. So on December 3rd, 2013, Council approved the 2014 budget with $182,700 of capital budget funding to be reallocated. We temporarily parked it into a capital project to be reallocated pending a report in 2014. And this is the report. So on RB 3.1, it identifies a few capital projects to be added. The first one is a community improvement plan project for all six villages, and this is to top up the existing capital project from $45,000 to $100,000 to complete a community improvement plan for all six villages. The second project is $10,000 for a public address system replacement at the Caledon Community Complex. Third project is an economic development tourism study for $40,000. The next item is energy efficient lighting upgrades at the Caledon Center for Recreation and Wellness. And then we've got an animal shelter generator and fencing for the animal shelter. Total there is $182,700, and we remove our placeholder capital project for $182,700, so the net impact is zero. We've, in effect, reallocated the capital. The next part of the report talks about, the budget was approved on December 3rd. The next part of the report talks about the town's grant request. So the town submitted a grant request or expression of interest for the Willoughby Road Bridge. And on December 9th, 6 days after our budget was approved, we received notice from the Ministry of Agriculture and Food that our expression of interest, the first round of our grant request, we were not successful. The exact wording that they provided was they received about approximately 350 grant requests, and other applicants with highly critical projects had more challenging economic conditions. And they wrote that the challenging economic conditions were measured by property assessments and incomes. Now, in that letter, they didn't elaborate on what they meant by other economic conditions aside from property assessments and incomes. But we can gather some information from what we received from the Ontario Municipal Partnership Fund grant information, the OMPF, which we received. We received an update from OMPF, I believe it was December 18th, where they identified their new program and some revised calculations. Now, in their new program, there's some additional funding that's available, additional OMPF grant funding that's available for municipalities where they score that they need additional funding according to a new index called the Northern and Rural Municipal Fiscal Circumstance Index, the MFCI. And on RB 3.3, it gives you a description of how MFCI works. What I've pasted I've pasted in the schedules the letter from the Ministry of Agriculture and Food and the OMPF information. But on 3.4, I've basically cut out an important section of the OMPF grant determination. And what it says is that under the MFCI, it looks at certain economic conditions. The two primary ones are what was referenced in the grant request. So it's income and property assessment. They also have some other secondary factors, but overall, the town of Caledon ranks third from the top out of 349 northern and rural municipalities. And let me just put something up on the screen here. So it's a bit hard to see. It didn't come out in the photocopies, but where the town ranked, that chart that's shown there. Let me just move over. So the chart that's shown here, on the far left-hand side, it identifies municipalities that are in a relatively positive circumstance, fiscal circumstance. And on the far right, it's municipalities that are in relatively challenging circumstances. The town of Caledon scored a 0.1, which is around this area here, which means that we're in a relatively positive circumstance. And again, we're ranked third from 349 municipalities. As a result, we are, what this indicates is that we are in a relatively good economic circumstance compared to the other municipalities that receive the OMPF grant. On the next page, RB 3.5, it identifies the two primary indicator scores, and there it shows the weighted assessment per household and the median household income. So the town of Caledon shows the weighted assessment per household at $601,000 compared to the median for the other 348 municipalities, $231,000. And again, income is $98,000 compared to $61,000. So those are the two primary indicators that were referenced in the grant. And as a result of this, if there are future grants using the same indicators, it's unlikely that the town will receive any future grants. So what's highlighted in the report is that this criteria, at looking at only these two factors to deny the town or reject the town's grant application, doesn't consider the amount or the state of the infrastructure. So the town has 133 major structures, which are bridges and culverts. By looking at just the weighted assessment per household and income, it doesn't consider municipalities that have 133 structures versus another municipality that may have 50 structures. What it also does not consider is that the town has worked hard at increasing its tax-funded capital. So in essence, it's increased it by more than 200% since 2008-2009, going from $3.4 million of tax-funded capital to the 2014 budget of $11.5 million of tax-funded capital, and also issuing debt related to capital. It doesn't recognize that the fact that the town has actually done all this in order to address the infrastructure deficit compared to maybe other municipalities that are in the more challenging circumstance but haven't explored other ways of funding their capital infrastructure deficit. So the second part of this report is making a recommendation to write to the province to change the way that they evaluate grant requests. That concludes my presentation.
Okay, thank you. I would just like to add to that before I go to all my speakers that, the criteria by the province, and I brought this up at the AMO board meeting, that what the province is doing is rewarding poorly run debt-filled municipalities when they do it this way, and they're penalizing well-run, fiscally responsible municipalities. And the AMO board agreed that we had to talk to the province and say you cannot base it on that. It's not right. It's not fair. And there's many municipalities who did not get this grant because they were considered too well-run, I guess we could say, or too fiscally responsible. And I know the past chair or past president of AMO is one of them. His municipality, it infuriated him that that's the way the province is doing it. So Caledon isn't the only one. And when we had our Countryside Mayors Alliance meeting on Friday, all of us who applied didn't get it because they felt we were too fiscally well run. And that is not the way you should be allocating. I think you hit the nail right on the head where you allocate based on the amount of infrastructure. And anyway, I'll go to Councillor Whitehead.
Well, I certainly agree with your comments, Madam Chairman, but the reality is the province only has so much money that they can spend. It itself is in pretty serious financial difficulty. And I think that the other approach we need to take is to, yes, we should approve this report and we should continue to dialogue with the province about how we're not receiving grants as a rural municipality the way we think we should. But the bigger picture is that the province steadily over the last 40 years has not been willing to fund the town of Caledon. When we started the Region Appeal, when we were desperate in our financial situation, we had no money at all, and lots of deficits in our equipment and so on. The province had to bail us out at that time, but over the last 40 years, the picture has changed quite a bit. And I guess what the reality of the situation is that we are actually quite well off as a municipality, to some extent, largely through your leadership and yours, Ron, as well. I mean, you were hired to put us on a better footing financially, and you've done that. You offered us excellent guidance. But the reality is the province is not going to provide us with money. And the reality is the region will continue to do its business in Caledon, but it's not going to subsidize us either. So that local economic development is our priority, and we have to start to say to the province, as well as what you're saying, Madam Chair, is we have to start to say to the province, okay, let's deal with the reality of this situation. We do have one of the lowest tax rates in the GTA. We do have more capital funding than we had before. And yes, you won't subsidize us. And yes, the Region Appeal isn't in a position to do that either. But you, the province, have to stop policies that inhibit our local economic development. You have to stop restricting the size of our industrial parks. You have to stop interfering with how we develop in terms of our density, residential density, and our industrial density. You have to give us a free rein here to create locally, within our own municipality, the financial options that allow us to actually continue to grow and strengthen without the support of other levels of government. So please, province, stop interfering with us in our pursuit of local economic development. We have a great opportunity for it. We all know that because of our proximity to the airport and the intermodal terminals and the market. We have great opportunities here to be stable and to be independent financially. But the province has to stop interfering with us and has to stop policies that are designed for another time and another place. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Councillor Beffert.
Thank you, Fuing. I just have a couple of clarifications, if I could. First of all, with regard to the Kennedy Road Bridge, there are a couple on that road. I'm assuming that you're talking about the bridge north of Charleston Side Road. Would that be correct?
Through you, Madam Mayor, I will have to check. I can't remember from our budget deliberations the exact location of that bridge.
Yeah, I think it is. I just want to make sure it's not the single lane bridge north of Old Base Line. Secondly, in terms of the Willoughby Bridge, which bridge are we talking about there? Melville? And I guess my third point is with regard to the Dominion Street Bridge, there's a safety factor there that I'm just wondering how we've taken into account that safety issue. It's not a very well-traveled road, but it's a crucial road for a few people who can't get in and out without that bridge. Are we okay with leaving that for a little bit longer? I'm just not sure.
Yeah, through you, Madam Mayor, my understanding of the priority is basically the Willoughby Bridge is shovel-ready. So okay. If we approve the reallocation, we can get started on that right away. The Kennedy Road Bridge, again, will be the next shovel-ready project, and the Dominion Street Bridge, I believe, is a bit further along. So even if we kept the capital funding, that project may not start until later on this year or possibly even next year. So that was the rationale behind moving the Dominion Street Bridge further back into 2015 and then moving up the Willoughby Street Bridge.
And I agree with that completely, except I just want to make sure that we look at the safety aspect of the Dominion Street Bridge. That's a crucial point for me. Thanks.
Okay. Councillor Patterak.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Are we going to be responding back to the province with any kind of letter outlining some of our concerns and the methodology that they have chosen to use?
Through you, Madam Mayor, yes, that is the recommendation that we address this.
Okay. I don't share the crocodile tears that Councillor Whitehead has about the structural deficit that the province and the federal government enjoy. And that's something of their own making. It was based on ideological considerations to reduce taxes and had nothing to do with what our needs might be. And now we're in a situation where our taxes are lower than our neighbor to the south, and it's still a popular perception that we can't go there. And we're a leading nation and a leading province in OECD countries and in a lot of categories, and yet we don't have money to do the basic stuff to keep ourselves going. So I have a big problem with that. But in regard to the particular issues that we have at hand, two things that I would like to make the province aware of is that many of these structures are heavily used by provincial traffic. People choose to use town roads to stay off of provincial highways, which are overloaded and would be beyond capacity if they didn't have our roads to use. Willoughby is a very lightly settled area. I live on it. We have close to 1,000 cars a day on that road. Why? People are avoiding using the top leg of Highway 10. The other thing that I would like to make the province aware of, and Councillor Whitehead alluded to it, is 80.5% of our land mass is provincially frozen from significant economic development. I wouldn't change that, but there has to be some recognition by the province of what they are asking the 19.5% of our land mass to do for the 100% of our land mass. And I would expect that of the 133 structures, that maybe 120 of them are in the green belt. 13 of them are in the developed area. There's a real imbalance there, and we have to make the province aware of that and aware of what they're doing on the one hand has an outcome on the other hand. And it's not just us, it's other Greenbelt communities. There should be some recognition and some program for Greenbelt communities to compensate us in some way, some minor way, and we're not talking about millions of dollars every year, but something to keep us abreast of our infrastructure, which we can't have economic development in the area where that infrastructure occurs because of the provincial plans. So I would like that reflected in the letter as well. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Mazzapelli.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Thank you, Fu Wing. It was a really good report. I do support it. And I do strongly support the notion of writing a letter to the various ministries. I believe food and agriculture and food and rural affairs were mentioned as relevant ministries. And to add to the list, sure, you can look at income and property value, but having a blanket equation that you apply to each municipality disregards their unique character. And one of the unique characters of Caledon is that we have a very large geographical area relative to our population. And that's not expressed at all in their equation. So yes, we may have a higher median income level and household value, but when you break that down per square acre or whatever you want to look at, it creates a different picture. And across that land mass, we have all of these pieces of infrastructure that we are required to maintain. So I would like that captured as well as a very relevant factor in paying for our capital infrastructure. The last thing I just wanted to throw out there, Madam Mayor, and I don't know if there's any merit to this, is maybe in that letter to encourage that you would be willing to meet with them and discuss this in person. I don't know how impactful a letter on its own is, but I just put that out there for your consideration. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. I just want to say that the Greater Toronto Countryside Mayors Alliance have requested through me as chair to meet with Minister Sousa, who is the Minister of Finance, Minister Leal, who is Rural Affairs, Minister Jeffrey, Minister of Municipal Affairs and Housing, and Minister Murray, who is Infrastructure and Public Works, Transportation. So those requests are in. I can tell you that there's more of an opportunity to meet with the ministers when you have 14 other mayors or 13 other mayors and myself, then there is one off. So that's how we're doing it. Okay. Okay, Councillor DeBoer.
Thanks. I think the other part that you need to include in your discussion, because I can see it heading the same way, is
support for cleanup from the ice storm. The City of Toronto is saying right now in the news that they need to be helped more so than anybody else, even though they were invited to the table with Mayor McCallion and essentially, I would suggest, the GTA mayors, your organization. So, I think that this is going to be an issue that this is, it's good that staff have brought it to light as to actually how this these grants do come about. But I know in our industry, in agriculture, there's a lot of times our organizations that are within the GTA don't qualify for rural grants. And it's very difficult to get support because of where we are. Our even fairs and outside of our area seem to be better at flushing some money out of the province than we are here, especially recognizing that we've got the largest piece of protected countryside. And another highway, like the 410, we finally got the provincial highway 410 connected to another provincial highway. We're going to have 427 doing exactly the same thing. And it comes back to the comments of Richard, is that we've got a local highways providing a provincial function. So they need to, especially at the provincial level. And they certainly have other sources of income, and they can do things that we legally are not even allowed to do. And it's a political philosophy at that level when support is needed there. And it can't always be politics. I think there's got to be some social good, and there's got to be some more support rather than just counting where the number of votes are, because I can see the ice cleanup. If you did the actual count by the per-person cost in Toronto and the per-person cost now that we're seeing, $2.9 million, I think, projected here, the per-person cost, it's going to be very different, especially when you talk about throughout the rural areas in the GTA and the countryside mayors and that organization. So we maybe got to set up a line in the sand, so to say, in the next election that's coming up with regards to where's the province going to start supporting what's going on in the rural area, including the job front, which is what we're trying to do, but it's hindering small business and agriculture to try and provide the jobs as well. So
I agree. It is, Mayor McCallion has pulled together all the mayors and regional chairs in the GTA to sit down, and Hamilton to sit down, to talk about doing a concerted effort with the province, and we're doing that on Friday morning coming up. And very interesting, Mayor McCallion was telling us at regional council on Thursday that she had spoken with Mayor Ford, and that he was on side for doing a joint effort and everything, and but he's gone off on his own again, trying to put the pressure on the province. And I agree with you. I think if you look at it on a per household or a per person basis, the cost is a lot more probably in Caledon than it is in Toronto. But anyway, we'll do the best we can. Okay. I'm going to go to RB3, which is the motion moved by Councillor Beffert, seconded by Councillor Foley, that report CS 2014-013 regarding 2014 capital or budget capital allocation be received, that new 2014 capital projects be established for the recommended list of capital projects outlined in Table 1 of Report CS 2014-013, funded from the remaining tax levy funded capital of $182,700 in 2014 capital project number 14-099, unallocated 2014 capital, and that following the transfer of funding to the new 2014 capital projects, capital project number 14-099, unallocated 2014 capital, be closed, and that the Dominion Street Bridge, one of the two bridges included in the 2014 capital project number 14-025 for the replacement and rehabilitation of bridges, be replaced by the Willoughby Road Bridge, and that capital funds for the construction of the Dominion Street Bridge be considered in a future capital budget, and that the mayor draft a letter to the province requesting that future grant pre-qualification review criteria be expanded beyond property assessments and household incomes within a municipality. Okay. All those in favor? It's carried. Okay, we'll go to the in-camera, moved by Councillor Foley, seconded by Councillor Patterack, that confidential report CS 2014-010 regarding a proposed lease agreement between the Town of Caledon and Caledon Parent Child Center for space within the Albion Bolton Union Community Center located at 150 Queen Street South, Bolton, Ward 5, be received. That the mayor and clerk be authorized to execute a lease agreement between the Caledon Parent Child Center and the Corporation of the Town of Caledon to allow the Caledon Parent Child Center to lease space within the Albion Bolton Union Community Center located at 150 Queen Street South, Bolton, Ontario, to be used as a parent child daycare center in accordance with the terms of staff report CS 2014-010. All those in favor? It's carried. Okay, I have a motion moved by Councillor Foley, seconded by Councillor Patterack, that a motion without notice be introduced concerning declaring the Town of Caledon a disaster area as it is time sensitive. All those in favor? It's carried. Okay, I have a motion moved by Councillor Foley, seconded by Councillor Patterack, whereas the municipality of the Town of Caledon recently experienced an ice storm on December 21st, 2013, and has experienced substantial damage to municipal property and infrastructure. Therefore, be it resolved that the Minister of Municipal Affairs and Housing be requested to declare the Town of Caledon a disaster area for the purpose of the Ontario Disaster Relief Assistance Program, or alternatively, provide another source of emergency financial assistance given the particular severe nature of damage in the Town of Caledon, and further that the Mayor and Chief Administrative Officer for the Town of Caledon be delegated authority to take whatever steps required by legislation or conditions of provincial or federal funding to facilitate the receipt of such funds for the Town of Caledon, including but not limited to appointing members to a disaster relief committee to administer ODRAP as required to assist with the effects of the ice storm and the recovery therefrom. And further, that a copy of this resolution be presented to the Ministry of Municipal Affairs and Housing under the provisions of the ODRAP. And further, that copies of this resolution be forwarded to all Peel area MPs and MPPs, the Region of Peel, and the cities of Brampton and Mississauga for their information. Okay. Oh, I'm looking. I don't need to look anymore. Councillor Whitehead.
Well, thank you, Madam Chairman, and some of the commentary occurred in the last item on this, but I think we really need to make people understand within Caledon and certainly the other levels of government, which this motion is doing, that, you know, on a per capita basis, on a property basis, this is a huge burden. I mean, it's between 4 and 5% increase on the tax base if you tried to pay for it in the year that it occurred. Between 4 and 5%. Toronto, when you read theirs, maybe a high number in dollars, but it's not between 4 and 5% load on the taxes. We know from our capital discussions that go on constantly that if you tried to take that equivalent amount out of the capital, we would be back to a desperate situation that we were in during the Great Recession in 2008. This amount of money, $2.9 million, is clearly beyond the capacity of this large, huge municipality geographically, but very small population in a population and property sense, to carry the burden. This is a natural disaster. And it's a natural disaster that very much fits the profile of the geography of our municipality and the hills and the elevations, our tendency to have ice storms anyway, for which we have small contingencies that we carry forward from year to year to deal with, small contingencies, nothing like this. Now, will it occur again? Who knows? Global warming, weather change that's going on in our planet, the answer is probably. But we have to deal with the situation of now. This is clearly beyond the reasonable capacity of the property taxpayers and the narrow tax base that exists in the way municipalities are funded to pick up suddenly an impact that's between 4% and 5% of our budget, and through a circumstance that has nothing to do with our good or bad management of government, has nothing to do with the where people live or how they live their lives. It has everything to do with a natural catastrophe that parallels probably what we were faced with when Hurricane Hazel struck us in 1954, because it only struck our river valleys where we had a relatively small population then. This tragedy was across the whole municipality, and everybody was affected. Power outages, personal property loss. I mean, $2.9 million is the municipal impact. The personal property impact, I'm sure, is 10 times that, if I can judge from my own property, because I live in the bush, as you know, Madam Chairman, up on the Gore Road, and in our large lots and huge forest areas that we have for the benefit of all of Ontario, for the water system and so on, it is a catastrophic loss. And I don't know in the spring, frankly. We can clean our river valleys, and we can clean our streets, and we can remove the dangers from our trail system. And after we've done all that through the course of the winter, the people of Caledon are going to be faced in the spring with dealing with their personal property damage. And that in itself is going to be enormous. And to add on to that a theoretical and practical tax increase of roughly 5% is just not something that the individual people can endure. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Okay. Councillor Paderak?
Well, I just... I agree with everything that Councillor Whitehead said, and one of the things that we've done, rather than have our hand out, we have had our hand out, but we've asked for cooperation from other municipalities, and we've had great cooperation. And I just wanted to say that yesterday I knew as a point of information that the Ottawa forestry crews were working on Shaw's Creek, so I drove by to see how they were doing. Boy, there's a massive material to be dealt with, even though they were cleaning it up. It still is going to take a heck of a lot of chipping to get that stuff loaded up and off the roadway. But there was supposedly two crews, which we thought were four people. It looked like it was more like six people to me. One of them was refueling his chainsaw, so I stopped, talked to him, told him I was a member of council, and personally thanked him and asked him to thank his fellow crew members because, here they were far away from home, literally beavering away at this pile of wood that was just everywhere. I mean, I don't know how many hundred trees were taken down in that one location, but they were working on it. And so I think when we're talking to the province, we should tell them. We haven't just stood around and with our hand out for the province. We've been trying to be as resourceful as we possibly can. And luckily, or thankfully, other municipalities have helped us out. Thank you.
Thank you. And actually, I had a conversation with Mayor Watson, the mayor of Ottawa, yesterday, so that I could personally thank him for sending the forestry crew. And I've also thanked Mayor, I'm not going to remember everybody's names, Mayor Grossi and Mayor Clayton, who are on my countryside mayors, who have sent chippers. And I thanked the mayor of Kawartha Lakes also. So we're very fortunate that we have good relationships with all of these so that they send these to help us. Okay, Councillor Foley.
Yes, thank you, Madam Mayor. Sorry, I don't really have all of my voice, but I just want to speak for a second. I think it definitely is catastrophic proportions, and I think for people in Caledon, it's difficult to get your head around how big it is. People wonder why it takes a long time to get to their street or a certain area, but not everybody thinks about the 700 and some square kilometers that Caledon is. So geographically, it's challenging for us. And the amount of snow, and ice debris that's been generated from the ice storm. I had a call from a lady on Culpeper Court saying there was too much snow, and I wasn't so sure I could do anything about that, but I went to look, and literally the pile of snow in the middle of their court, it's huge. They can barely back out of their driveways, and the pile, without a word of a lie, is probably as tall as I am. This is a lot of snow. You drive down Hickman Street where there's no boulevard. The snow from the street goes on the splash pad. There's nowhere for anybody to walk. We have a seniors home around the corner. People are walking down the middle of the street. So we need snow removed. We need snow taken away. And heaven help us if we get another storm before we've managed to clean up a lot of what we're left with. The Seapree Bridge is a huge challenge for us. You've got a narrow pathway there. The plows put the snow on the pathway. The town tries to take it off so people can walk. The plow goes by and puts it back on the pathway. So there's nowhere to walk across the bridge. So we have a lot of difficult situations to contend with. It has been a huge impact on the community, on people, and especially on our seniors. So I really hope that the province will see fit in helping us through this, at least financially. Thank you.
Councillor Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, and I apologize, but I've been dealing with a drainage issue before we got here. One thing I want to ask is, I think a lot of it's been said, and I concur. I guess the question I have is, conservation authorities, are they putting their own costs in, or are we doing that? As far as dealing with the streams. And the reason why
Mr. Wong, can you answer that, please?
Through you, Madam Mayor. My understanding is that the Region of Peel will be submitting a claim on behalf of the conservation authorities.
Okay.
Can I ask one thing? I know when Cheltenham got flooded a couple of years back, we didn't have the expertise to blow the ice jam, and it had a huge impact. And my understanding is there are experts through M&R and different ones, and I'm just saying, have we factored that cost in, or who can factor that cost in, that if we get a jam, that we have the experts to be able to come in and blow that out? Because it is storm-related.
That should be all through the Region of Peel. The conservation authorities, from what Mr. Wong has said, are putting in the through the Region of Peel. And so all of that should be factored in through the Region of Peel. And the conservation authorities, from the almost 20 years I've been involved, have brought in people to blow the ice jams with dynamite.
Yes, that's true, but they didn't have the resource the last time because of the cutbacks, and that's what I'm just saying. I just want to make sure we've got ourselves guarded, and maybe that's something that if we could ask the Region to appeal as a town, that we want to make sure that there is expertise in case we do have a nice jam at a bridge, that we have the experts, the cost of those experts to get that clear.
Okay, Councillor DeBoer.
The extent to the 2.9 million, like we're still dealing with, and I'm getting calls now with sidewalk cleaning because of the ice buildup. Is that factored into that, or is that kind of being viewed as part of the normal operations of our Public Works Department?
Through you, Madam Mayor, what we reported previously was that we spent approximately $557,000 from the 21st to the 31st. The revised projection for the full cost for the full recovery related to the ice storm is about $2.9 million, and the bulk of the increase since December 31st is related to cleanup, so the removal of the clearing of urban trees, rural trees, and so on.
What about, for example, the ice? I know that there's been a lot more material go down on the roads because the ice is actually, for lack of a better word, welded to the asphalt. It's taken more material and more man hours to apply the material. I know Bruce told us about the carbide blade that they were looking at to try and lift some of this material. Now that might not be, but definitely a lot more salt. They were refilling the Castledurg yard this past week. Is that factored into it as well?
Through Madam Mayor, there was additional salt that was required related to the ice storm, which we have captured. Anything else we have to discuss with Public Works as to what was related to the ice storm and what was related to storms subsequent to the ice storm?
Okay, because it's going to be, I guess it's going to be something you're going to have to work on, but, you know, I've had a number of residents call, some leaving names, and I've been able to try and talk to some of them. Some of them not, because sidewalks aren't cleaned, but, you know, the banks are melting the last couple of days, and because the banks are like this, it's like a river on the sidewalk. Well, now we're going to get it frozen, and, you know, there's only so many hours, and what I found out, too, was that we were working up against hours of work, maximum hours of work as well, and keeping operators. So I know the Public Works Director probably talked to us all about those sort of things. I think everybody's been trying to do as much as possible. And I think our residents, you know, we need to get the message out. I think we talked about it at the last meeting, you know, keeping the residents informed as to what we are trying to do, the challenges that we're having, and that we're going to keep working away at it. But I can't see some of this stuff being, now we're getting storm tomorrow again, so... You know, some of this stuff is going to be, we're going to have to wait for spring. So, and I also wonder whether, you know, we're addressing the problems, we're getting support, and it's going to be another one of these, like the grant. Well, we've done the job, and we've got it covered off, and maybe Caledon doesn't need anything. So, I don't know. Okay. Doing what we had to do and doing what needs to be done, which is kind of still the rural way of doing things, rather than looking for somebody to do it for us, is kind of going to come around and bite us again, probably.
I'm tempted to say something, but I'll bite my tongue. Oh, would it be controversial, let me tell you. All I wanted to say is maybe it's time that all the municipalities that the province of Ontario doesn't support get out of the province of Ontario. Anyway, Councillor Whitehead?
Briefly, Madam Chairman, Councillor Thompson asked a question about conservation authorities, and last Friday at the TRCA meeting, Mr. Denis, this CAO, was asked the very question about what is conservation doing about cleanup of the river valleys, and he said they are proceeding as fast as they can with all of the people and resources that are necessary, because they are mandated as a provincial agency to deal with flood control. And the reason the regions are putting in the conservation request at rather than the conservation authorities individually is that should the conservation authorities fail to be funded by the province of Ontario to deal with flood control, which is a provincial mandate that the provincial agency has, it'll reflect in the regional levies next year, because the conservation authority doesn't have the option not to do the work. And they don't have the option to wait either. We have 9 to 10 weeks before the early part of runoff begins, and the conservation authorities are working now in the river valleys, do their assessment. They've already started work, and it's going to cost an awful lot of money. So it's not only the $2.9 million that we're asking for today. It's what the region appeal is going to have to ask on behalf of both of the conservation, all four of the conservation authorities that represent this area in their levies. Otherwise, we as property taxpayers are going to have to pay that in our regional levy. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Beffert?
Yes, just to follow up on both Councillor Whitehead and Councillor DeBoer, Councillor Whitehead made it clear that in the spring there's going to be a real resurgence of what has to be done on private properties. And Councillor DeBoer talked about the fact that we've got to notify people exactly what we're doing. The calls are starting to come in now about, you know, exactly how is the town going to help us? And we talked about this last meeting, Madam Mayor, and you talked about the four-foot bundle. That's just not going to happen in the kind of terrain that we have and the kind of properties that we have. So I think it's really important. I think we've got a report coming forward on the 21st, but people are asking now, for the first wave of cleanup, which is allowing them to get into their driveways and working with their neighbors, but B, the second wave, which will be how do I clean my property and get rid of this stuff? It's going to be really crucial.
Okay. Councillor Foley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Fu Wing, did that estimate include money for cleanup of our parks and trails as well?
Through Madam Mayor, yes, it did.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I would just like to ask either Mr. Barnes or Mr. Wong, if I mean, we had the Credit Valley Conservation here last week, and they said that it's their job to monitor. And I mean, I brought up the fact that somebody's got to clean it up, and they said that wasn't their mandate. So I find it really interesting that the TRCA says it is their mandate, and so I guess the Credit River, all the trees, and I can tell you, just go to the bridge in Inglewood on McLaughlin Road, and you can look up the river or down the river, and there's trees in the river on both, and that's just the part you can see. So I know the Credit got hit really hard, and it's a problem. So if the Credit Valley Conservation aren't taking any responsibility for cleanup, are they just thinking that the tooth fairy's coming to clean it up or something? I have no idea, because I was pretty straight with them last week telling them that the town of Caledon doesn't have the resources to do it and that it should be them or MNR. So can we find out, please, from Credit Valley Conservation? I know Councillor Thompson's on the board. I guess I would like to think that you would know what they're doing. Okay. Thank you. I read the motion. I think probably it should be a recorded vote if someone would like to ask for a recorded vote. Thank you. All those in favor, please stand.
Thank you, Your Worship. A recorded vote was called, and I see that all members of council in attendance are in favor, so the motion carries unanimously.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we're going to move on. We'll go to council communications, inquiries, and announcements. There aren't any announcements. There isn't any urgent business. There are some notices of motion printed with our agendas, and the first one is moved by Councillor Whitehead, seconded by Councillor Patterack, that staff report back to council concerning the process and impacts to conduct a thoroughly impartial air quality study in the town of Caledon before any additional pit and quarry applications are considered, and that staff investigate the creation of an air quality bylaw for the town of Caledon, and that staff investigate the creation of a recycling bylaw for the town of Caledon. Any questions? All those in favor? Carried. Okay. The next notice of motion, moved by Councillor Patterack, seconded by Councillor Beffert, whereas there is a concern in the community over the recycling of aggregate products occurring in active gravel pits, and whereas there is confusion as to the roles of the Ministry of the Environment, the Ministry of Natural Resources, and the town in regard to relevant legislation, regulations, approvals, and supervision of this activity in gravel pits, and whereas this confusion should be cleared up, and whereas there will be future aggregate applications in Caledon, including recycling of aggregate within active pits, therefore, be it resolved that a council workshop be scheduled concerning the recycling of aggregate products occurring in active gravel pits, and further, that staff from the Ministry of the Environment and the Ministry of Natural Resources be requested to participate in the council workshop, and further, that staff notify the Region Appeal, the Niagara Escarpment Commission, Aggregate Recycling Ontario, and resident groups concerned with aggregate applications of this workshop. Any questions? Forgot. Councillor DeBoer?
I got ahead of you when you were reading. I got that figured out. I think as a question with regards to the workshop, we had one of those presentations that talked about aggregate recycling, and I believe it was a recycling site in Amsterdam at the not too far from the airport. And it was a contained site, and I think it looked like it had the coverall shelters and dust control. I just wonder if through the workshop, whether information about that and how support for an approach like that would come about, because it makes a lot more sense to recycle the material close to where it will be reused. It was interesting, we had that trip with the region, and they were looking at recycling material. That was the benefit of me coming late and having my own guide. we got talking about recycled material, and they are looking at recycled material on the bypass, and it being essentially right next door to it. You know, a lot of the recycled material would be used in construction to the south of the Greenbelt, to the south of the Oak Ridges Moraine, whereas our aggregate pits are actually in the Greenbelt or above the Greenbelt north. So, you know, does it make sense to have the recycling below the Greenbelt, below where the material is going to be used, maybe essentially next door to this Highway 413, next to 427? And I just wonder if that could be part of the workshop.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Thompson?
Well, my question is I understand we're talking about pits, but we do have recycling facilities just like James Dick over on Highway 50L, and that's in, could be urbanized around it in one of the proposals. And I'm just wondering if that maybe should be part of the discussion as well. And Councillor DeBoer and Foley and I were on a tour of the bar just before Christmas there, and they were recycling that day, and it wasn't like there wasn't a lot of dust coming off or noise. But I'm just saying, I think we need to really take a hard look at that, but we already have another proposed site down in my area as well. So I think we, you know, pits and that is, I don't disagree, but I think we need to look at recycling in general, if that's possible.
Councillor Beffert.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I think the comment I'd like to pull out of the motion is, whereas there will be future aggregate applications in Caledon, I think that's an understatement. I think I can take one hand and tell you in the next couple of years we'll have at least five applications. And I think this is a crucial time for us to discuss this issue. So I agree with the motion. My, not concern, but my recommendation is that we somehow, each time we have an application for a pit, whether it be just a regular pit or whether it now includes recycling, we have the formation of a group to oppose that pit. And many of them have serious, clear, concise, and accurate concerns about what it is that they want the council and the to understand. So somehow, when these workshops are set up, there has to be a way of allowing these groups to articulate to our council what it is that they're concerned about, but also to hear from the representatives that Councillor Paderak has mentioned, the region, the Ministry of the Environment, the Ministry of Natural Resources, of who's responsible and what is going to happen. It also allows the ministry to hear what the concerns are. So whatever we do in terms of setting up the workshops, I would heartily recommend that we include these groups and begin to realize as a council what the issues are that they're putting forward. I think it includes what we've already just passed with respect to air quality. I think it includes the kinds of things that we've talked about in terms of the condition of the recycled products that are sitting on the property and how dangerous they are, all of those things. So I just would like to make sure that the workshop is established so that these people have an opportunity, obviously within a context, to make their presentations and to make us aware of what it is they're concerned about. Thank you.
Okay. Would the clerk like to address what the workshops, how they're set up, please?
Thank you, Your Worship. Through you to Council. It's my understanding, well, the procedural bylaw outlines the format of a workshop, and essentially the format of the workshop is to hear from the presenter and then to for Council to ask questions. There is no portion of that of the meeting to include other presentations. That being said, it is Council's procedural bylaw, so if that's something that Council wishes to look into, then it would require a whole process to do that.
Okay. Councillor Whitehead.
Madam Chairman, I certainly will support the motion, but I want the context to be understood that it's not the restricted form of workshop that the clerk is talking about. This is a major undertaking, and one that's very necessary in Caledon. And I would suggest, Madam Chairman, that this process ought to be close to the process that we have, for instance, that we're going through now to expand the urban residential expansion area in Bolton, which is a series of workshops and designed to filter through and make efficient the process. And that what really first thing that needs to happen upon the passage of this motion is a report that comes from staff to tell us how we would go through this process, how much it would cost, and how long it would take. Because I don't want to find that we've passed a motion, raised a bunch of expectations, have a council-like workshop, as described in the bylaw, and then everybody goes away frustrated. This is a very major issue. Madam Chairman, one of the questions we have to ask ourselves at the forefront of it, which has been mentioned somewhat in the previous speakers, is do you want to recycle in your pits anyway? Do you really want to go to your headwaters areas and where your water table is so important and start to process material, or do you want what James Dick is running on 50 Highway? He's running an industrial recycling center, you know, and he's going to improve it. And he sells that huge hill. If you haven't been by it lately, go by. It's massive. They sell that hill three times a year at the moment, three times a year. It's a huge amount of material that's being recycled. And you have to ask yourself, does it need to be recycled? Of course it does. Do we need to have recycled materials put into our economy? Of course we do. But do you really have to go below the water table or near to the water table in our headwaters areas to do that sort of activity? I would think not. And therefore, I think that needs to be discussed. But we don't discuss it and say it can't be there. If that's the conclusion, we have to also discuss, well, where will it be? You know, will it be in Tullamore, where the water courses aren't significant, where the regional road system is there? For example, we have lots of land in Caledon in order to deal with this recycling question. We're not limited to somebody that has a license to extract material, and therefore somebody in Queen's Park thinks it's a great idea to recycle the material back in that same hole in the ground. So I'm suggesting, Madam Chairman, that it be understood in the passing of this motion that the first thing that we're going to find out from staff is how do we go through this process in the most effective way. And I wonder if perhaps that could be added to the motion where it gets, on approval, it gets referred to staff for a report on the design for the process. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Okay. Councillor Paderak.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The intent of my motion and where it came out of was our December 9th meeting on the Olympia application. And one of the frustrating things, I think, for the public and for others in that meeting was that there was a lot of misunderstanding and not a lot of clarity on what is provincial rules and responsibilities and what is municipal rules and responsibilities. And so as a first step, and I don't disagree with anything that's been said, as a first step, I wanted to organize a workshop where we get clear, enunciated statements from the two ministries that are responsible in some way for the current set of regulations, which is allowing these to be incorporated. And it's not even the pit operator who's applying for these. These are being they're being told by M&R, you set up a recycling area. So that's what I want to do with this workshop. It's just that very clear thing. And as our CAO will tell us, our public servants at the provincial level are a little gun-shy with the public. They don't let them out of their cages very often. So we want them to be able to come here in what they perceive as a safe environment, have questions from us, determining, and we can filter questions from the public and present them, and to find out exactly under what legislation, under what regulations this is being done. One of the things that PitSense has brought forward is they believe that this is a Class 3 industrial use. I don't know the MOE legislation backwards and forwards, but I assume that that means that this is considered waste material and it needs a C of A. From what I understand of what's occurred in the application for Olympia and what is proposed for Blue Lands, the MOE and the M&R do not consider this something that requires a C of A. So that's what I want to clear up all that stuff in one neat little package. It doesn't mean it's the end of it. It's only the beginning of it. And if we don't want this to occur in our town, that's something that we take up with ourselves, with the region, with the NEC, and then with the province to see how we can manage this. Council is absolutely right that we have a little bit of a hole in our zoning bylaw right now, because I believe the James Dick is something that's a non-conforming use. We have had an application from, well, we haven't had an expression of interest from an aggregate producer who wanted to have a recycling in the Victoria Park, Victoria Settlement Industrial Park. But we don't have anything specifically in our zoning bylaw. So that's something that we have to look into and see what is required and see what other municipalities have done. And but in terms of this thing, I just want to have a very neat, clean discussion of which side of the fence we all sit on and under what authorities are these proposed uses occurring. We're not going to get changes. These are going to be relatively low-level regional representatives from MNR and MOE. I just want clarity on the issue as it exists in the world today in Ontario in terms of regulation and law. And that's what I was seeking. If council wants to do something else, then that wasn't my motion.
Okay. Councillor DeBoer?
I understand what Councillor Patterak is wanted from the motion, but I think that we should be using this as the starting off point onto a bigger exercise, and I think we need to maybe look at committing to it, to that bigger exercise, and that is looking at trying to find a solution, a long-term viable solution. I think we've always, as a community, looked to being at the front and looked to leading, Councillor Patterak's suggestion is right on. That is the first question that we need to have answered. But I myself would like to have a commitment that we're not going to stop just there. I think we need to, once we find out what the ministry is saying, and once the ministry says yes as a requirement of all new applications, we want recycling. Because as staff in downtown Toronto at Queen's Park, we feel that it's best to go back there, which is in all likelihood what we're going to be told. I'd like to have the knowledge after that meeting, knowing that we're going to continue to move forward in telling the province that that doesn't make sense. And maybe it makes sense that part of that workshop introduces the discussion over high-capacity, European-style recycling and what makes it work, because what better way to send a message back to the province through their foot soldier, so to say, back saying that, you know, this is what Caledon's looking at, this is what we heard there. It may or may not be heard when it goes back to the province, but I think that, you know, if this is a requirement of the province, I think I'd like to have as part of it, you know, what can be done, what are the other options, and what does make sense, and you know, what there's got to be somebody in the industry through the stone, sand, and gravel, through the recycling agencies, they should be able to give us some sort of an idea at that same meeting. What it takes to set up a facility like what we were kind of shown a couple of pictures of with PitSense. Because I think the two of them would be related. Maybe it can't happen in that form. Maybe it makes the most sense to have it in a gravel pit. Right now, I wouldn't think so, but you know, the two of them are kind of related because we're looking at two options. One is what the province is telling us we have to do theoretically, and that is recycling in the pit. The other option is what was presented to us, and that was recycling in a dedicated location close to a market. And I think the two of them do relate.
Okay. Councillor Whitehead?
Well, I certainly agree. Councillor Patterak is right, and that's one of the first meetings you'd want to have. But it should be in the matrix of understanding what it is we're going to do with this process, and that therefore not become a be-all to end-all. You have a meeting, the ministry tells you it's none of your business and goes away, because frankly that's what they're going to do. Is we want to hear them say that, and we want to tell them there's something wrong with provincial policy, but we also need to go on, as is our reputation, Madam Chairman, to develop policies. I mean, how did we end up with control of the Oak Ridges Marine legislation? How did we end up with the administrative process taking place in this building, even though some people complained about the process? But how did we not have a provincial agency for the Oak Ridges Marine? How did we not have a ministry running the Oak Ridges Marine? Because we presented the province with an alternative model that made sense and they accepted. Well, we can't do that unless we go through a process to develop an alternative model. Yes, I agree with Councillor DeBoer. I mean, if you want to ask somebody, ask James Dick why his recycling center isn't in the Caledon pit. I'll tell you what he'll say is what Nick just said he said. He wanted it close to market. He wanted it easy to receive the material, process the material, and reship the material into the market. It didn't make sense for him to go up into his pit up in Caledon and have all that extra haulage costs to deal with a recycled industrial product for a near industrial activity. And James Dick is your best witness. He's in the business. He's one of the bigger ones. Why didn't he go to his pit to reorganize the industrial waste? It's exactly what Nick said is the reason. And we need to process it. So I don't want... My problem now, Madam Chairman, is we're hearing one interpretation of the motion and another interpretation of the motion. And I think as we pass the motion, it better be clearly understood by the staff what it is we passed and what it is we expect to be done. Thank you.
Thank you. I heard very clearly what Councillor Patterak said the whole idea of his motion is, and that was to clear up who is responsible for what, because people are confused out there, or they're not listening, or they don't want to listen. They want us to be responsible for everything, and we're not. And so I would say that you pass this motion, and you have the Ministry of Natural Resources and Ministry of the Environment come, answer the questions, explain who's responsible for what. But also, I would suggest that for the next council meeting, you have a motion or a notice of motion that is put forward ahead of time that sends back to staff, asking staff to come up with a process and put in it all the things that you think should be in that process for moving forward with whether we have recycling in our pits or not. So that's the way I see it, because there are two things here. Okay? Councillor Patterak.
Put the wrong red light on. Sorry.
Oh, I couldn't figure out what was going on all of a sudden, and I was just...
Our official plan does speak to the desirability of the recycling of aggregate, but it is silent on whether we participate and how we participate as a community in that. So we have a gap there, and that's one of the programs that we're going to have to fill out, whether how and under what circumstances in an industrial area recycling is acceptable and... possibly, if it's allowed, or if we can have a dialogue with the province on what is their understanding of recycling in pits. The irony of this situation is that a few years ago, when there were aggregate applications, the people who are against the pits said, why aren't we recycling more? Look at what they do in the UK, which has a lot more brownfield redevelopment going on, and they have a high percentage of the aggregates that they used are recycled. They don't use as much aggregate because they don't have the depth of frost that we have, which really aggravates our consumption and drives the numbers of tons per person up considerably. So there was a concerted movement on the part of certain portions of the public to do more recycling. So the industry got their head around that, and they worked with the province, and they have come up with some things that maybe aren't perfect. But one of the things they did was basically they changed the regulations, and I know even in the NEC it's a recycling is now allowed in aggregate pits in the NEC. So we have that situation, and so all of a sudden we have a great deal of confusion about whether this material is going to be clean or not and all that kind of stuff, and that's one of the things that I want to clarify in the workshop. The other thing is that in my discussion with producers, both here and at the NEC, is that in these remote locations, they don't expect a lot of business because everything, as we've been talking about, transportation is everything. In terms of there's two products that they'll accept is clean concrete and cleaned crushed aggregate, recycled aggregate product, or wrap. Well, the fact is that there isn't a whole lot of wrap available because, like the region, they just did 136, and they ground up the road, and they put it right down in place. In addition to that, there are companies that have arisen or started their business, and they build new driveways out of recycled product. They put it down dry and maybe add a little bit of asphalt cement to it. But I had one neighbor to the south of me and another neighbor, both of whom have had this done. So any product that is out there, this company and these other companies are scooping it up and are willing to buy it because they're making more money on it than you could by taking an asphalt product and blending it into a road base, a sub material. The other aspect of it is the concrete, and again, it's very heavy. I did, when this came up, I had a conversation with Mr. Pavato of Olympia. He said he didn't expect to get a whole lot of concrete. They would accept used concrete from sidewalks. That's what they didn't want anything with rebar. They're not going to have the capacity to crush concrete that has steel in it. So they're just going to be accepting that. So it remains to be seen, despite what M&R hopes will be a grand experiment and large volumes of material coming into these pits in the countryside, we have to see. But the thrust of the motion is to find out exactly the nature of the materials and under what regulations they are being regulated. So I hope we can do this as stage one, and I think it's the mayor has made an excellent suggestion in that we come up with another notice of motion, maybe a number of us work on it together, as to what we see as the next steps. And I started out, I think one of the first next steps is to start to develop our own rules for having this located in an industrial park.
Okay. Councillor Beffert.
Well, I think we're moving in the right direction. I think this is the first step. I'm just going to ask if Councillor Paterak would be willing to add one thing to the current motion as a friendly, not amendment, but inclusion, that if you're going to invite staff from the Ministry of the Environment and the Ministry of Natural Resources to give us the lay of the land, why don't we have a representative from the recycling industry as well so that we get sort of a sense of what's happening in the industry? Because they'd be here at the same time and might be able to contradict some of the things that are saying. Then we can move ahead with what we need to do on the next round. So if you're going to have someone from the Ministry of the Environment, the Ministry of Natural Resources, that we also include someone, and I don't know who that would be. It could be OSSGA, it could be James Dick, it could be Sweetenham, whoever, to be here at the same time and give us their perspective on what it is.
There is an Aggregate Recycling Ontario,
right.
So that's who you'd invite.
That's who you'd invite. If Councillor Paterak would be all right with that, I'd include that.
He already has in the motion that they're to be invited.
Okay.
But we'll ask them to participate. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. So all those in favor of the motion? Carried. And we'll expect a notice of motion for next council meeting? Okay. I'm going to just go to the last notice of motion, moved by Councillor Foley, seconded by Councillor Whitehead, that the 2014 council meeting schedule be revised to delete the council workshop scheduled for February 4th, 2014, and that the above noted change be noted on the town's website. Councillor Thompson, to this.
What if we decide to use this for our aggregate workshop?
No, there's not enough time to organize that and get all these people there.
All right.
So, okay. All those in favor of the motion? It's carried. Thank you. Okay. Are there any notices of motion? Councillor Whitehead? We already did it.
Thinking of other things that I was going to say. Okay, thank you.
Okay. I'll go back to council inquiries later. We're going to go to RB6 because the consultants are here. And do you have the motion? And I'm going to Okay, I have a motion moved by Councillor Whitehead, seconded by Councillor DeBoer, that report DP 2014-002 regarding Caledon East Community Improvement Plan and Bolton Community Improvement Plan Amendment be received, and that Council enact a bylaw to designate a community improvement project area in Caledon East, and that Council endorse the Caledon East Community Improvement Plan attached as Schedule A to report DP 2014-002 regarding a long-term strategy to revitalize the Caledon East community, and that Council enact a bylaw to adopt the Caledon East Community Improvement Plan, and that Council endorse the Bolton Community Improvement Plan Amendment to amend certain policies in the Bolton Community Improvement Plan regarding financial incentive programs attached as Schedule B to report DP 2014-002, excuse me, and that bylaw 2009-052 being a bylaw to adopt a community improvement plan be amended as outlined in Schedule B to report DP 2014-002. Do you have questions, councillors? Okay, Councillor Mezzapelli. Oh, sorry. Oh, yes, Councillor Mezzapelli.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. It's going to take me a while to get used to this new technology.
Yeah, me too. It's
very minor detail. Firstly, very glad to see this come forward and glad to see that we took opportunity of not only introducing a CIP for Caledon East, but taking advantage of that opportunity to create parity and upgrade the Bolton CIP at the same time. So I think that was good to see an opportunity to kill two birds with one stone, so to speak. So I don't have any questions so much on the study itself. Reading the report, and maybe it's clarified in the actual study, it's a tiny little detail, but it caught my eye on RB 6.4 for a property and landscape improvement grant. It talks about $10,000 for corner lots. If the unit is not a corner lot, is there a dollar value that they would be able to apply for? And as I said, it's probably clarified in the actual CIP document, but it just looked like there was an amount for a corner lot, but I didn't see an amount for a lot, which is just a front-facing lot.
For you, Madam Mayor, in answer to your question.
You'll have to speak into the mic because we can't hear you.
Sorry. Through you, Madam Mayor, in answer to your question, the maximum amount of grant is $7,500, and so the $10,000 is for the corner lots.
For the corner lots. Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Okay. Thank you. Councillor Whitehead?
Well, thank you, Madam Chairman. I certainly support the report. It's very well done. I want to talk about an implementation tool. Upon passage of this report, are we going to put out an information bulletin to the businesses and perhaps a little brochure to alert them of it? I know that there's at least two businesses that really want to get on with this, and although this is the middle of the winter time, as we all know, they need lead time to get their building permits and so on. There aren't very many businesses in the Caledon East area, so will we be putting out an information piece to them individually rather than just have them find out by chance that this is going on?
Through you, Madam Mayor, to Councillor Whitehead, yes, very similar to what we've done with Bolton in the past. We will be developing some promotional material specific for the Caledon East program and distributing it directly to the businesses. And I would imagine Sandra has been in discussion with some interested parties to date. She will follow up following this meeting to let them know of its passage today. And if I'm not mistaken, it's subject to an appeal period. So, once the appeal period's over, they'll be able to take advantage of the program.
Could we let CERC know right away, Andrea and...
I'm sure Sandra, that's one of the first people that Sandra will get in touch with,
yep.
Would be Andrea.
She's a great little promoter, you know.
Yep.
We couldn't afford her services, and she gives it to us for free anyway. So I think it's great to get her involved. When do you think this piece would be available to them?
Through you, Madam Mayor, as soon as we get approval today, we'll have our designer start working on it. I would think that it'll be a couple of weeks before it's actually done, but definitely within the appeal period, it'll be ready for distribution once we get the go-ahead.
So within the month, everybody will get the information?
Yes. Yep.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Councillor Foley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On page RB 6.4 and 5, it listed the types of incentive programs. Then further down 6.5, where it talked about the Bolton CIP, in that first paragraph, it said the amendment addresses incentive programs, including a couple of them that were listed for the Kalani CIP aren't listed there. Is it just understood that they are also included? Like, it didn't specifically mention the historic properties or the planning and building application fee in that paragraph.
Through you, Madam Mayor, in answer to your question, the Bolton CIP didn't have a separation for historic buildings.
Okay.
But it does have the facade improvement program.
Right.
So it historic buildings would be addressed through that.
Through that. Mm-hmm. And how about the planning and building application fee?
Is this not an amendment to the
yes.
Bolton one? So the Bolton
yes.
one already has that, I'm assuming?
It's already in there.
And so
yes.
what you're seeing here would be the amendments to it?
Right.
So the changes to what's already there?
So
exactly.
it's there, it's just not being amended? Okay.
That I would have to check because
yeah.
I don't know off the top of my head, but I can let you know.
Okay. And my only other question was the first bullet in that same section under the Bolton CIP, it said increase to certain maximum amounts to align with the Caledon East CIP. Are there any that aren't? Doesn't say all, it's just certain.
Right. It was the programs that are similar to what's in the Caledon East CIP. So there's some programs that are different, and we weren't trying to redo the plan. We were just trying to make what was similar the same.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Councillor Thompson.
Two questions. I had one here. I was trying to find it, but I've lost the sticky off my page. But the one is I see where you've got the mobility, bicycling, and different things. But what I don't see in here, and I think this is what was asked by even the community, is how the connectivity of the trail system through Caledon East, which is unique, on how that interlocks. And there's nothing here that mentions that. And if I've missed it, I'd really appreciate the I'm just making sure we got it covered off.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know that has been asked by some of the residents, and so I'm just asking that question.
I believe it is through this municipal strategy where we speak to how we have a trail system that is unique to Caledon East that has a lot of potential, and then there's a list of recommendations on how it could be improved.
Okay. This is how it integrates, and I missed that part, but I got to say it's a really good report. It was very well put together. You broke it down into sections that's easy and it's readable. So it's very, very good. The last question I have is the floodplain. And I know we were looking at is what are the solutions in dealing with the floodplain in the downtown core. And that's where I lost my sticky to emphasize that. That has been a question that has been asked many, many times. And I'm just saying I'm not satisfied with what the final report was. And I just hope we can beef that up as we go forward. Because that's going to be a challenge no matter what we try to do. And we really need to take a strong, like to have stronger wording than what you had here. And I lost the sticky on the page that you did mention it. Sorry, but it's a big report. I don't want to tie up time with this. But if I can just throw that out there through Madam Mayor, that we emphasize that a little bit more because that's going to be a challenge no matter who tries to improve anything. We need those words stronger.
Sorry, I'm just referring, Paula. There is a comment about it on page 4 of the report, Councillor
yes,
Thompson.
Yes, I did, and I lost where it was.
It's at the bottom of the page? Page 4 of 8?
Of.
Oh.
I don't, yeah, it was, but we can't hear you, Mary, or Mrs. Hall.
So at the bottom of the page, it did indicate that there was a report that was supposed to come to council on December the 10th of last year on the floodplain study, and it was deferred, and they're supposed to be coming back in February or March of this year in regards to that study. So you do not have a position from Public Works yet on the floodplain study, so you will have an opportunity to have discussions about that? Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Councillor DeBoer? Oh, you went and turned it off.
Oh, okay. Wrong button. It's not the same.
How can you guys be so confused?
There.
They don't even look the same.
They're both red. I think my question was along the same lines as Councillor Thompson, and that is that we've got the flood study, and it's unfortunate that we didn't allow that to be completed in December so that we kind of had an idea of where it was going to be, because you know, if it's going to require, you know, work to be done to meet the requirements of this flood prevention or whatever is involved, and wherever that report finishes up, then that should have actually been a category within this, so that so that we could assist with making that happen. Now the question I would have is if we approve this, or when we approve this, how hard will it be if we're going to have to do something like that with the flood mitigation study?
Through you, Mayor Morrison, in answer to your question, there is a process that you can go through to amend community improvement plan documents. If you want to change a program, such as an incentive program, you would have to go through a process that's similar to the OPA amendments, and you would be required to have a public statutory meeting. But there is a process.
There is a process, but in other words, we're going to have that report in February or March, and theoretically, to do anything with it to support the changes that might have to be made out of that one, we're probably looking at a lengthy process then.
And I guess that would be only if it was, the recommendation was on incentive, to provide an incentive program. The flood study stands on its own with its recommendations, and I don't know that that would cover this.
Okay. Yeah, it's just that it has been, and that flood mitigation, I know on one application, was the stumbling block as far as making it happen, and it actually added a lot of process to the application. So it's, hopefully it doesn't limit the good work and everything that's proposed here, because this is a good news story, and we got to continue to work away at the other villages, and this is our template. And I think when we started down this road, I think Norm took us down this road at the start, and we started with Bolton, and we knew we were going to do Caledon East, and we were going to work on Caledon Village, and we're going to do the villages and try and work through trying to develop an economy. And it comes back to, you know, the comment earlier is that these villages are all in the protected countryside, and trying to drive a rural economy, a tourism economy, a something, so that this is all, you know, this all plays part in supporting the entire community. So, but no, this is good. We'll just have to wait for the other one from Public Works and
Mr. Barnes,
see what happens.
Through you, Mayor Morrison. I guess I'm sitting here listening to the conversation. One of the reasons you have a community improvement plan is it allows the public sector, the municipality, to provide grants to businesses, and that avoids the bonusing provisions of the Municipal Act. So if you want to have a subsidy program for the group in terms of dealing with flood, then you are going to have to amend this particular bylaw and go through an appropriate process to do it. The other alternative is you could not approve this, and you could wait until the options come forward on flood mitigation, but then what you're doing is you're delaying the process probably a couple of months to even get this part of the program going. So I think that's really what your choice is.
Okay, Councillor Mazzapelli.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. On the heels of Councillor Whitehead's comments, which were or recommendation, which was good with respect to making the business community in Caledon East aware of this program, my question is, in the Bolton area where the CIP is being enhanced, will there concurrently be a means and education awareness program to let them be aware that there are improvements within the Bolton area?
Mr. Lingard?
Yes, through you, Madam Mayor, to Councillor Mazzapelli, we will be undertaking a communications exercise as well with Bolton businesses to let them know of the changes, and we've also got our newsletter. So, again, if this gets approved today and we get through the appeal period, we'll take that opportunity to communicate it.
Thank you.
Okay. Councillor Thompson?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. It's just coming back to after what Mr. Barnes was saying. How much more is it going to cost us to go through a whole process versus delaying this? Are we really going to lose time deferring this a month or two versus if we have to go through a full process to put an amendment with a public meeting, whatever, it's cost the staff time. Would it not be a lot more affordable to wait on 2 months on this, defer it back until we have the flood mitigation study done by Public Works?
And someone, Mr. Barnes?
Well, I guess, you know, that's a choice of council. I guess the amendment process is once we have a report from Public Works, and that may require, that may be recommending a program, or it may be simply saying that it's a private owner's responsibility and these are the options to deal with it. So, you know, that's the issue. I don't think, you know, yes, we would have to advertise and hold a public meeting and that, but I don't think those are significant consequences of a delay.
Okay. Councillor Foley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to, I think it was Councillor Mazzapelli's point about getting the word out in the Bolton community, something else we could do is the BIA's AGM is coming up in February, March, I think March. So maybe you could reach out to them, Norm, and offer to be at that AGM as a speaker.
Okay. Councillor Whitehead.
Thanks, Madam Chairman. I would not support the idea that we delay this work after all these months in order to wait for the flood mitigation study. I mean, the two for sure and three probable applications you're going to get from businesses in Caledon East aren't affected by the flood mitigation study at all because they're on the east side of Airport Road. I really want us to proceed with this and put it to bed, and these people have been asking for months for us to finish our business relative to the CIP, and as the CAO just said, the cost of dealing with it after the flood mitigation study is really not that significant. Now, I'd ask for a recorded vote.
Okay. Councillor DeBoer?
Yeah, I too would suggest that we support this and pass it and allow it to move on because there are more applications or potential applications outside of the area that's going to be affected by the flood mitigation. My question was, what would we do next when we get that report? So, no, this is a good news story for a number of properties in Caledon East wishing to do some improvements and for the vast majority of the village.
Okay. All those in favor, please stand.
Thank you, Your Worship. A recorded vote is called, and I see that Councillor Beffert, Councillor DeBoer, Councillor Foley, Mayor Morrison, and everyone else is all in favor. The motion is carried.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. We're going to go back to RB1. Okay. I have a motion moved by Councillor Patterack, seconded by Councillor DeBoer, that report ADM 2014-002 regarding notice policy update be received, and that the notice policy attached as Schedule A to report ADM 2014-002 be adopted. Would you like to speak to it, please? Oh, okay. Laura? Okay, actually, I would like someone to, and I wrote it on my stuff, please explain exactly what this is doing, because there's some members of the public who seem to think that we're taking all conversation with the community away they do not, they haven't read it, or they haven't read it properly, or they haven't understood it. And even after I read it, I wrote a comment at the top of mine, explain, please. So I would really like you to go through it very simply and explaining what you're doing, because I don't want anyone to think we're taking the public input away. In fact, I think we're enhancing it. But.
Yeah, we are actually enhancing it. What we're doing is, before we were following the public information meeting process, so just like you would hear a planning matter, the staff member would give the presentation to council, would get your input, get public input. What we're doing is actually we're taking the format to an open house. So we're the public can come, council can come, and you're actually just talking to staff one-on-one, but you're still getting the information presented to you by the staff person, but it's not formal set up here in council chambers. It can take place at any of the facilities that we have in Caledon, and it's just more of sort of a walkthrough one-on-one approach. It's not going to follow the formal structure of a public information meeting.
So we actually will go out to the public?
We will be, yes. Yeah.
Thank you, Worship. Further to Ms. Hall's comments, I'd like just to reiterate the fact that any requirements under any legislation, so whether it's the development charges bylaw, the development charges legislation, the Planning Act legislation, the Municipal Act, anything that requires a public information meeting, we will still have that. This is just for non-regulatory items, so things like the sign bylaw, maybe licensing. So the Municipal Act has removed that requirement to have a public meeting, so this is an effort for us to engage the stakeholders.
And it also allows us to do surveys and other type of public engagement opportunities as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it eliminates the also need to have quorum for these type of engagements from council.
Okay. Because when, so that is a question, when we have these meetings that are not regulatory, mm-hmm. we would need to have quorum. And lots of times we don't have quorum. So, okay. That's understandable. Councillor Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Well, again, it's just a clarification. I've had to get it to sink in. I had to read this a couple of times to get it figured out myself. So, and yes, like the mayor, I had a lot of comments to make. The question is I think we need to still say for planning matters and whatever, we're still having the public information meetings that we require under the Municipal Act, correct?
Yeah, Madam Mayor, to Councillor Thompson. The notice policy is regulated under the Municipal Act. So PIMs are actually regulated, whatever is regulated under the Planning Act or the DC Act, that is something we will still follow. This is actually something that is more towards the Municipal Act. We, as a municipality, we have to have a notice policy for certain items that are within the Municipal Act. Planning matters are not within the Municipal Act.
Exactly, and that's why I wanted to clarify, because the big challenge is you didn't really catch it till the ahas were catching you at the end, where you realize the Planning Act is a different matter.
That's right.
And the one is the region appeal does a lot of this, and it works very, very well. I find people are better informed mm-hmm. walking out after the fact, and I think personally it is a better process. And the only thing is my question I have is, I know one thing about the public information meetings is it's recorded minutes. And when we're changing those smaller things, it means that you will not be retaining minutes. Is that a concern?
I don't think so, because something that we found is not all members of the public want to come up in this type of situation and delegate counsel. So this is actually more of a one-on-one approach, and staff will still be recording those comments and putting them in the final recommendation to council. So they'll be included in the report to council when that matter comes forward. So we still will be recording our own notes, but it won't be actually recorded where there's a tape.
Okay. But this is the stuff that won't be appealable anyway, or it won't be going, and I understand
this
that.
This is bylaws that you pass.
But I think that
council.
Was the other thing, that if we just emphasize what we're trying to talk, this is not part of the Planning Act, this is part of
that's two separate matters.
Two separate matters, and I think that's where the confusion, I think I could see is where it's come up, is what the mayor was saying.
For sure, and in the Municipal Act, there are certain, like when you're changing the name of a street, we're following all of our notice provisions in there, but council back quite some time ago had asked that we have more public engagement for major amendments or new regulatory bylaws, so this is what we're actually, that's what we're introducing in here, is just making that public engagement more informal, not so formal.
And I know we've brought the public information, before, public information meetings, we've had that consulting in the front. And I know that's resolved a lot of issues before it comes into here to be discussed.
Absolutely.
And it works very well having that open house ahead of time to allow those issues to get clarified before it comes in here. And I think it's explained better out there.
And so this process will follow something very similar to the region and other municipalities, where it's just more of an open house, just an opportunity to walk through, hear what is being presented, but more informally, and then getting that comment one-on-one with the staff member.
The one question I have, Madam Mayor, is that I'm wondering if that's just something that we can get communicated out on what we're trying to do here, that we're trying to be more accessible to the public. Thank you.
Absolutely.
With comment sheets at all of these.
For
yeah.
Sure.
We need to make sure that there's comment sheets. I mean, the Region Appeal does that. And excellent at that. Yes, Mr. Goddard.
And through you, Your Worship, I just want to add as well, members of the public are always welcome to engage members of council and speak with you, and we're not prohibiting any of that or submitting correspondence. At these public at the public open houses, any comments that are received do form part of the record, so the corporation does keep those. So they're not going to... not being used, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Councillor Mezzapelli.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Thank you, Laura. I just first reading it, it kind of was like a red light, and then when I read through it carefully, I did distinguish that this is not all matters. These are not matters under the Planning Act. These are strictly matters as you have laid them out here. And you've put them into chart form and how we propose to give notice. Are these the only examples that we are considering changing to an open house form from what we are currently doing? Like you've categorized them, there's 11 of them. The question I'm asking is this in its entirety the type of meetings that we are suggesting to be switched to an open house format?
Through Madam Mayor, to Councillor Mezzapelli, these matters that you see here, except for items number 10 and 11, all of these items, 8, 9, 10, and 11, all the other matters are actually in the Municipal Act, and we have to provide notice. We just, as a municipality, dictate what type of notice we would provide for those matters. 8, 9, 10, and 11 are ones that Council had asked us to specifically identify in our notice policy how we are going to provide notice when changes are made. If there's things going on like strategic planning and other types of situations that we're undertaking as a municipality, I would always assume that we would do public engagement. This is just more prescribed how we're going to provide notice for these specific matters.
Okay. And how, and I understand in the report it talks about, you know, a PIM being a very formal meeting, people may not be as willing to engage and offer their comments. And I agree with that. Conversely, how the one catch-all in a PIM is the recorded minutes are taken, and those are form public record. So in the open house scenario, which I support because it's getting into the local communities and getting the one-on-ones and getting people to really encourage them to share what they think. But how do we ensure, now that there's not minutes, that those comments, the feedback, whether it's positive or negative, gets absorbed into that final report?
So that would be the responsibility of staff present. So we'll make sure that we have the resources there, making sure that the comment sheets are filled out, comments are written down from members of the public. That's something we will do as our due diligence from staff.
Okay. So will this... Our previous style where we had a PIM, mm-hmm. we would have recorded minutes and that. With this system where we will have open house, both of those will come to a report.
Yes.
Previously and what we're proposing to do. Will that make the report where it talks about public feedback, might that section be more robust as a result of this public consultation where it's a one-on-one? Do you expect that will be the case?
I expect that staff will take best practice from other municipalities, lessons learned from our own experience, I'm speaking specifically for bylaws or things under this notice policy. I think they would definitely capture sort of the public engagement piece, as well as best practice, what other municipalities are doing to make the final recommendation to council.
Okay. And the clerk made a very good point.
I think it will encourage public engagement. Sorry. I think it will further engage public engagement, because I think people are more comfortable in an informal atmosphere where they can just sort of speak to the staff directly. I think we actually will see more presence.
Okay. I just wanted to reiterate, the clerk made a really good point that the public can always engage their counselor and express their opinion. And that informally makes its way to the decision made on that matter. So I think that's worth mentioning. Can you express what other when we look at changing things, we look at our comparables. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me what other municipalities, either within Peel Region or outside, do on matters like this? Are we making changes that they are not, or are we just making changes to bring us to where they already are?
We are aligning ourselves with other municipalities. Typically, this type of public engagement through your public notice policy through the Municipal Act is through an open house. It's not a public information meeting.
Okay. Okay. That is it for myself. Okay. Thank you, Laura.
And just to note, it was a hard report to write. It was very hard to capture exactly what we were trying to do and not confuse anyone.
Okay, Councillor Beffert.
Yes, thanks for the report. And like the mayor, I was confused when I first read it, and I also received some calls. Listening to you, I understand the nature of the public information meetings does not include the planning process, which is good, but the regulatory process. I'm still not totally convinced. My first question is on page 107. It says that currently public information meetings are required. Now, can you tell me, is that as part of our notice policy? That it's required?
Through Madam Mayor, to Councillor Beffert, yes. Right now in our public notice policy, it is required that we have a PIM.
And what I see you wanting to do is delete the requirement for a public information meeting. In certain circumstances, that may be a good thing. This is just my opinion. Let me give you an example. We tried, we wanted to close a small portion of a road in Callan Village, James Street. Very few people were affected. The people in the community wanted it to happen because it affected traffic flow. So there was really no need for a public information meeting. An open house was held, and people were happy. However, if we tried to do the same thing with a bridge on McLaughlin Road, we need to have an opportunity, and I believe the public need an opportunity, to listen to others present their case and listen to what their councillors want to happen. Now, I know they can meet them at a public open house. Here's my recommendation. With your permission, I would like to see us where it says that staff recommends deleting the requirement for a public information meeting. That means that you don't have to have it as required, but replace the meeting with a required open house /and/or public information meeting. So if there's an issue that comes along that is of great concern to the local community, they can have that option to have a public information meeting. And you'd probably have quorum because you would have a situation that was serious enough for the councillors to want to come out.
Mr. Garter would like to speak to that, please. Okay.
Thank you, Your Worship. Through to Councillor Beffert, you're absolutely right. If Council does wish to ever have a public meeting, they can direct to do that. That being said, if a public meeting is asked for, then under the Municipal Act, we do have to produce an agenda, have quorum of Council, and we'll take minutes for those. So as long as we have the commitment from members of Council that if they wish to have a public meeting on a certain item, that come forward to Council, pass a motion to have a public meeting, and you can do that at any time, and then once that's done, then we would hold a special council meeting in accordance with the Municipal Act and our procedural bylaw.
That just reinforces my suggestion that we put and or, which means it's there and we can use it whenever we need it.
Through your mayor, Mayor Morrison, to Councillor Beffert, I don't think that's actually required to include in the notice policy because it's always an option for members of council.
What's important here is perception. I think it's important for the community. That may be different from, you know, a municipal perspective. I just think it's important for the community. But I'll live with the rest.
Okay, Councillor Paderak.
Yeah, Laura, I appreciate the difficulty in writing the report. And, you know, there's a lot of hindsight going on here, I'm sure, amongst yourselves as well as us. And one suggestion I would make is that that there be a with something like this, obviously we needed a little bit more of a preamble to the background in terms of dividing out the planning from the Municipal Act and speaking to that in particular. But I'm a little confused in the sense that some of these things that are listed on the chart, closing of a public highway, in the past I've been involved with legal staff and had private meetings with the abutting owners to discuss what the go-forward situation is. And then there was legal notice to posted, and that was followed by council reports. There weren't public information meetings on those things. So I'd just like you to clarify on these numbered activities, like 1 through 11, they all did not require public information meetings in the past.
Through Madam Mayor to Councillor Patterak, they currently still don't. You'll notice here that we're not asking to have a public or an open house or any type of public engagement in these. We're just, the notices, either we're posting it on our website, through the newspaper, sending out notice to those property owners of when the report is coming to council and the bylaw will be considered for those activities. I believe the only ones that require a public open house or an open house would be items 8, 9 through the budget process, 10 and 11. The other ones are all just notice through mail, website.
Okay, I just wanted
those type. Yeah, we haven't changed any of those areas. We're really just changing the definition of the public information meeting to an open house.
Yeah. Okay, that's good. I appreciate what the mayor has said as far as the comment sheets go. Mm-hmm. And one of the common comments that we get from the public when they hear that it's a what's normally referred to as a PIC, a public information mm-hmm. center, under the Planning Act and under certain other piece of legislation, as opposed to a PIM, is that it's the divide and conquer strategy by the authority that's undertaking the meeting. And so there's always a suspicion on the part of the public that everyone who asks the question isn't getting the same answer, whereas in the public information meeting, they get the same answer. So I take Councillor Befford's point, and I hear that you and the clerk have heard it, that when there's any controversy, we really should be going to a public information meeting, but not as a rule, just when there's controversy. Thank you.
Okay. Councillor Whitehead.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I had the same problem with the report, in that I had to read the whole report to understand that you were talking about a modified way of dealing with public with the public in information meetings, but not in the context of the Municipal Act or the Planning Act. But still, when I go back and read the beginning of the report, I still have that problem. But my suggestion, which I think is a simple one, and I would ask if staff are prepared to make a change, because we can't change your report, only you can do that, is if, as Councillor Patterak said, if perhaps right in the subject area of the report, notice public policy update, if you put a couple of lines below that, simply stating that this report is not meant to deal with issues of requirements for public information meetings under the Municipal Act or the Planning Act, I think that actually clarifies the issue, because the reader would then understand that you're dealing with topics that are outside of that, but within our need to have open public process. So, would you agree to and I'm not suggesting me wordsmith it, you're the expert at that, and it's a very good report, but are you agreeable to put that notice at the front of the motion, the report, that's, because the people that have complained to me, and there have been two, have been dealing with only issues related to the Municipal Act and the Planning Act, where they thought that the provisions were being watered down.
Through Madam Mayor to Councillor Whitehead, certainly we can even look at ways on our website to maybe differentiate when it's a planning matter and when it's a notice that's provided under the Municipal Act. And certainly look at, I can't really change my report at this time, unless of course the item is deferred and I'm coming back. But if you want to defer
once in a while, that said, I have asked over the last 25 years several times, as Mrs. Hall knows, if staff are agreeable to modify their report, and staff are perfectly capable of doing that if they think it makes sense, and if they say it at the time the motion is passed, there is no prohibition to you modifying your report if you think it's reasonable.
Okay. Councillor Whitehead, you could certainly refer it to the next council meeting, and they could modify and bring it to the next council meeting if you want.
I'm a little hesitant to do that because that introduces a very difficult process to have a simple thing done. I don't know why it's being suggested in the last two or three years that somehow you can't ask staff's cooperation. At the region, we do it constantly, and staff say yes, we'll take it as a staff undertaking, and the thing just proceeds.
Okay. Councillor Mazzapelli?
Anyway, you've heard my suggestion. I think it's very important if in the future, if anybody picks up this report, not read something on the web page, that they understand that this report, a staff member in the future, for instance, understands that this report is dealing with how you deal with the public and their need to have input outside of the requirements of the municipal act.
Ms. Hall, would you put a caveat on this report so that, people realize that we're not trying to get rid of all meetings with the public? Mr. Barnes.
Yes, just to clarify, Councillor Whitehead, this report does not apply to the Planning Act and the Development Charges Act. It does apply to the Municipal Act.
Well, whatever it applies or not apply to, they'd be clear at the beginning.
Right, okay.
I hear what you're saying, and I agree.
Okay. Councillor Mazzapelli?
Yes, very quickly, Madam Mayor, two things. One of which I forgot, and the other I just realized, which I think is worth noting, and Laura, you alluded to it, was, and I think it's worth reiterating, is the second half of the graph is the requirement for public notice. And what you've illustrated there is the requirement is usually just notice in the paper, things like that. So, in essence, we are going beyond that by having an open house to physically engage with the public. Would that be a correct, fair statement?
Yeah, through Madam Mayor to Councillor Mazzapelli, absolutely. We are going over and above. And it was a recommendation that was made from Council a couple of years ago for us to do that review and to have more public engagement, especially when it comes to regulatory bylaws. So we actually added the items 8, 9, 10, and 11 to support Council's recommendation. So, yeah, we've never in the past had any open house or public engagement for any of the bylaws that we used to come forward with. So that is something that was new when we passed the new notice policy last year.
Okay. And to re-ask one of the questions I had asked previously with this information, the other municipalities that we've compared ourselves with, do they go above and beyond and have open houses, or do they simply just have notice in the paper as required?
We had sort of a mixed review. Some do, some don't.
Okay. The Councillor Breffert made a very good point that there are issues that come up from time to time, which would be in our interest to put into a formal public information meeting, and I would certainly support that. And I would certainly support staff recommending to us in advance that this is an item that you might want to consider. You know, whether it comes from staff or us, I think collectively we should come up with that that decision. One specific question I had regarding item 10, the budget, it talks about establish or giving notice in the paper. So the open house, we never had a PIM for budget presentations. We had council meetings, we had a town budget open house. I just want to make sure that, is any of that changing? There's going to be council meetings related to the operating and capital budgets.
Ms. Gordon.
Well, through you, Your Worship, to Councillor Mazzapelli, there is no intention to change the council process whatsoever regarding the budget, and we have been following our notice policy or your notice policy in regards to the budget.
Okay, so item 10,
there's no change. So the notice policy that you see before you is the council notice policy that was adopted by council a number of years ago. The only change to this notice policy is the item number 8, which rather than having public information meetings be changed to public open houses. Other than that, the notice policy is remaining the same, which council adopted a couple of years ago.
Okay. Very good. Thank you very much.
Okay. So you have the motion before you, Council. All those in favor of the motion? It's carried. If I could just say, in the actual motion itself, it would have been very helpful if it had have had a preamble so that people who read the motion could have understood exactly, you know, the whereas. Anyway. Okay, we'll move on to RB2. Have a motion moved by Councillor Whitehead, seconded by Councillor DeBoer, that report ADM 2014-003 regarding the dedication, naming, and assuming of Block A of Plan 949, Albion, Caledon, be received, and that a bylaw be enacted to dedicate to the town Block A on Plan 949, Albion, Caledon, as a public highway, and to name it Walton Drive. Are there any questions? Oh, all those in favor? It's carried. Okay, we'll move on to RB4, moved by Councillor Foley, seconded by Councillor Whitehead, that report CS 2014-014 regarding provincial consultation on development charges in Ontario be received, and that the province be requested to make the following changes to the Development Charges Act 1997. 1, 10-year historical average service level cap rules be amended to be more forward-looking with respect to service levels. 2, the 10% discount in the calculation of development charges be removed. 3, the ineligible services section be removed. And 4, the post-period benefit reduction rules be amended to automatically allow municipalities to include post-period benefit costs, excess capacity costs, inclusive of all study costs in the development charge calculation. That the Town of Caledon fully supports the comments and recommendations put forth by the Municipal Finance Officers Association, attached as Schedule A to the report CS 2014-014, as a response to the 19 questions posed by the province in the provincial consultation document, and that report CS 2014-014 be forwarded to the Ministry of Municipal Affairs and Housing. Okay, Councillor Paderak.
Sorry.
Your mic.
Thinking we're totally automated like the region, so sorry about that. I appreciate the report and I appreciate the recommendations, but I just want to go on record as saying that development charges are a tool. Right now, the municipality manages to run its affairs based on property tax, development charges, and fees, and to a small extent, occasionally grants. And I'm of the belief that we need more tools. The province gave the city of Toronto more revenue tools. Maybe not enough, but they did give them more tools. And I'm just wondering, where is the breaking point on development charges? It's $55,000, I believe, right now for a fully serviced lot to have a house built on it. It wasn't too long ago, and it still occurs, that people who have bought a lot and in a rural area, 1-acre lot, have sat on it for a number of years while they save their money, and then they come up and they basically are their own contractor, do a lot of work themselves, and get a house put on that of the minimum 1,200 square feet, 1,400 square feet. And the house does not represent a lot of money, but $40,000 or $45,000 in development charges is a lot, and if that goes north of that, we include hospitals and all these other things. Where's the breaking point? I have heard it said that the province and the development industry and certain other people think that it's still a modest impost on a new house, which would be in many cases about 10% of the cost if you're saying 500,000 is the average new house. But in the kinds of instances that I'm talking about where someone is really trying to build an affordable house, doing most of the work themselves, it becomes a much higher percentage of the cost of the house. I'm not saying the assessed value, but the dollars that that person is putting out. And I just think that we as a council and as a staff have to get together with our other partners, other municipalities, talking to the province about other tools. For instance, I know the federal government doesn't think highly of it, but the adding of a point of the sales tax in for the lower-tier municipality and the point for the upper-tier municipality would capture a significant amount of money from a new home, but it would also capture money elsewhere and be an amount of money that's more predictable and where there is more freedom in how it is spent, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't want to go around in circles here, but I just think that there's sometimes it's not glee, but there's too much enthusiasm for just adding on to the development charges because it's a tool, and as any tool, if you overtax it, it'll break, and it'll become dysfunctional. And maybe we should be having opening up discussions with all of our partners in the upper levels of government that we need a more diversified way of meeting our costs. Thank you.
Councillor Whitehead.
Well, thank you, Madam Chairman. I think this motion is essential that we pass it. I have said many times in this council that it is beyond belief to me that the province of Ontario would give away our money, by not providing any provincial alternative, by giving the development industry a break on the real cost of services. I don't think that the existing property taxpayer should subsidize growth. I have never thought that. But the province of Ontario thinks it's perfectly appropriate that the development industry gain the benefit and that the existing property owner pay the price, pay the penalty. The notion that the development industry always says when it comes out and cries about what we're doing is it's going to increase the price of the houses and be put on the back of the property owner. In a market as hot as this one, in a demand market that's as strong as this one, that is a completely wrong statement. Houses sell for whatever the market will bear. And Caledon is a very attractive place to live in, and people pay significant prices for their houses, and developers and builders make enormous profits. So this policy doesn't do anything, but give back to the developers and the builders a reward at the property owner's expense, existing property owner's expense. I know the lobby is strong, and I know the provincial politicians like to blink, but I've never thought that there was any equity in the notion that the province should arbitrarily cap and limit the amount of money that we can collect in order that we make sure in our development charges that we make the development industry and the growing population pay whatever the price is for essential municipal services. This motion is so important for us to pass. This issue is so important for us to prosecute in the spring when there's a provincial election, of finding any candidate from any party who's actually going to stand up and say, it's time the property taxpayers in Ontario stopped being forced to pay premiums in their taxes to subsidize the development industry. Because that's exactly what's going on in this riding. You look at the real estate prices all over Ontario, and I invite you to do that, and see the differences in the price of houses. And go and look at the development charges of municipalities, and you will not find a correlation between the price of the cost of a house that's sold and the value of the development charges. You won't find that correlation that the development industry says is naturally there. It's not there. As you pay the price on a private market of whatever the market will bear for the house. It bears no resemblance at all to the actual cost of building the house. I know the development across the street. I've followed it for the last 4 or 5 years, and it's just the same there as I've experienced in the last 25 years. No builder and developer running an effective operation fails to make good profits in the town of Caledon, and their profit margin and the value of the market value of the house is what dictates how that house sells for, not our development charges. And I said, just to finish it, Madam Chairman, I know I'm talking too long. It's time that we stood up and said clearly, the existing property owners and taxpayers in this municipality or anywhere else, but we speak for this municipality, have to stop being forced to subsidize growth in the residential component of our growth. Business and industry, everybody benefits from the prosperity there. Nobody benefits sitting in an existing house by a subsidy provided by somebody in, by the developer or builder in a new subdivision. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
I'm asking for a recorded vote.
Okay, Councillor Thompson.
Yeah, well, I know where Councillor Whitehead, you're right, but I also know where Councillor Patterack's coming from, was the person that's had that acre lot and has maintained it, and when he goes to build a house, it's a hard hit because those development charges do not benefit him. It's just the cost of having to live on that rural lot. It's a challenge that we have to deal with. So I understand where Councillor Patterack's coming from. But what I got to say, Fu Wing, is this is a really good report. What I'd like to do is get some clarification on one thing. Is the recommendation is the 10-year historical average on 4.3, the service cap, the rules, be more forward-looking. So I guess that's where I'm looking at, that's important to Caledon, because as we go forward, we're going to need to start to provide amenities that we haven't in the past. Sooner or later, let's use what's in the report here, transit. We don't have transit other than seniors. So how do we incorporate that? You don't have a 10-year back average, but is that forward thinking? Is that where we're, is that an example of what we're trying to do, or is what they're asking on that recommendation?
Through you, Madam Mayor, that's exactly the point. The 10-year historical service level cap basically puts a cap as to how much we can place on the development charges based on the service level we've been providing for the last 10 years, an average of that. And because we have no historical service level, our cap would pretty much be zero. So that means you cannot ask developers to contribute to development charges for transit if you have not had that service. The other aspect of that, or recommending the change, is that historically we've been building facilities, rec facilities, for example, which served basically as a rental of the facility. And as we move forward, we are providing facilities which have programming and other amenities inside. So if you look at the historical service level and you look at what we're planning to build in the future, there's a disconnect in terms of what we want to provide in the future and what's based on the growth that's coming and what we have provided in the past. And with this cap, a lot of those costs will be shifted onto the municipality.
And then that's the big challenge, and we're asking to intensify, which is more people, which requires more park space and everything, because there's no amenities in the backyards. There's no pools that we used to get tax assessment in the backyards. We're having to build more and more of those amenities at the cost of the municipality. And I'm just saying is how do we catch up, or how do we even get in the game? And with the intensification, especially the challenge that we're starting to deal with parking, in these new subdivisions, and they're wanting us to intensify more, it means sooner or later transit is going to have to come. But how is so cost prohibitive, there's just no way we can ever get into the game. So that's why I was just wanting clarification. Well, it's not perfect, but it's a start, and hopefully that will hold as we go forward. So that's an important aspect. So thank you for the clarification.
Okay. Councillor Foley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I agree with Councillor Whitehead. It's a very important report. I do agree with all of the recommendations in it, particularly recommendation number 3, where it talks about removing the ineligible services section. Is that list inclusive, Fu Wing? Is that all of the ineligible services? What I'm wondering about in particular is if this was adopted, this recommendation, how does that impact acquiring land for parks? I seriously doubt our cash in lieu of parkland is sufficient to provide for what we need.
Through you, Madam Mayor, this list is not all-inclusive. There are other items listed. With respect to parks, I believe there is another section in the Development Charge Act that actually says that parkland is not allowed as an eligible service. The purchase of parkland is not. And it's not covered off in my report, but it is covered off in the attachment, the MFOA recommendations, okay. That basically we maintain the cash in lieu of parkland, and that's provided for in the Planning Act, but we also allow for parkland to be an eligible service in the Development Charge Act. So that is covered off in the what we will be providing to the province.
Okay, thank you. And my other thought was to do with hospitals. Certainly we don't have a hospital yet, but I would think as Caledon grows, we will hit a threshold where we will need our own hospital or some type of medical facility. How does this?
Through you, Madam Mayor, when I mentioned that on RB 4.5, that is not an all-inclusive list.
Right.
One of the items that is listed there in the Act is hospitals.
So, to be clear, what
we're recommending is to remove the section of ineligible services, which also lists hospitals.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Councillor Mazzapelli.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Just wanted to make one quick comment or statement. And very similarly to my comments on RB10 when we talked about the provincial consultation on land use planning. Have we talked about that? No, we haven't. is having a provincial policy that has a blanket kind of approach to municipalities and not understanding how they're different in applying things like DCs. And I think that's significant in a community like Caledon, as we are a growing community and in many ways growing at a period of growth that we haven't encountered before, and we're having to supply services that we haven't had to historically provide. And you commented on the challenge of that in having a 10-year historic average. And if you want to, if you need to include something that you haven't had before, there's no way to capture that as far as DCs. So I think it's important that that reality in a community like ours be reflected. In larger communities where they're just developing but the level of service is maintained, it's not so much an issue. But in a community like ours, it's much more of an issue, and I think it's important to make that point. So I just wanted to echo some of the support for this, these four recommendations, and just utilizing some of the rationale, like as I had suggested, is practical reasons why it needs to be reviewed, again, particularly in a community such as ours. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Councillor DeBoer.
Thanks. I fully understand where the report's going and then the concerns, and I think it's moving in a direction where you're maybe starting to fix some of the issues. But, I'm kind of still on the, and as the discussions we've had here before that I brought up, you know, we're talking about $55,000. We remove, we've had the conversation with the 10% cap, remove that. I heard a suggestion that maybe hospitals need to be added into it. Transit needs to be added into it. I can see us heading towards, $75,000, $80,000 worth of development charges. And then we talk about wanting homes where people can, that are affordable. And having people live in the communities, and we're talking about $75,000 per unit. So it doesn't matter if it's a townhouse or a bigger house, and we start adding that onto it. I start to think about, and I think it's along the lines of Councillor Patterak's comments. Where is enough is enough, and at some point in time, some of these other services have to be provided for, but provided for in other ways. When I look at the homes that are going up in my area and they're paying $60,000, and you do them on the rural lots, the same ones, they only have a road that exists that gets paid for through the repairs on the property taxes, so the road gets maintained.
vast majority of the people want a pool, they'll put their own pool in. They don't use the facilities. We don't need to pay for parks. You know, a lot of the services are added to it. Fire and police, yes. But, you know, a lot of the other services, the rural, when you build a house out on the rural area, don't benefit from the services, but yet they end up paying the vast majority. I fully understand that you've got to get the dollars from the developers because they are making it. They're requiring us to deliver more services, expanding fire halls, building new recreation centers. I fully understand that, but there's got to be a way within the Development Charges Act to charge where the burden is. You know, and the burden ends up being on the full development or the community development, for lack of a better word, when you build villages or build new towns or subdivisions. When you look at the one-off lots, you know, like they're the ones that are going to end up paying a sizable amount of property tax because they're assessed at a higher price, but yet the load on the services isn't that, but it also assists us in paying for the services that are out there because you build on a rural lot, you're a bit more revenue on that rural lot covering the cost of maintaining our rural road infrastructure, and we've got it, so you know, you end up spreading the cost of that over a few more units. So I don't know as to whether the system's ideal. The system definitely isn't ideal. I think your suggestions are taking it in a direction where it's going to help, but I don't know if we're really at what answer would be fair and what's best for the long term. I don't see it yet. So, but you know, I'm going to be supporting this action because this is definitely taking us and fixing some of the problems that exist. But I think that there's other things that need to be looked at as well.
Okay, Mr. Wong, I think if we look at the regional DCs along with, especially in Mississauga and Brampton, where they're full services and everything, I thought they were up around $67,000. I think it's something like that.
Through you, Madam Mayor, I can't remember the exact number, but it's between 56 to 60-something thousand in total.
I know talking about the Region Appeal is going to be opening their development charges every year, looking at it and upping them if they have to. And they were saying that the way it's going, and I know Brampton and Mississauga were saying the way it's going to be $100,000 a unit probably within how many years, you know, in development charges with our municipal and with our regional because we can't afford it. It's interesting that the province of Ontario is saying that we have to have such densities. And when you look at the assessment from these densities, it doesn't pay for itself. And I know that it hasn't. We used to have, years ago, we would, at this council table, we would get a cutoff of a certain size of a house on a certain size of a lot up to that level. It costs the municipality money. After that, we actually were ahead. And so that tells me that we are going to have to increase our industrial that much more and that much faster in order to subsidize the intense, the densities that we're going to have in the future. That's just the way it's going to have to be. And therefore, the province of Ontario is going to have to understand, and that's in another report further along, are going to have to understand, maybe it's in next week's, but anyway, they're going to have to understand that delinking between the residential and the industrial. And they're also going to have to understand that all of the countryside municipalities that are going to have growth have to be allowed to catch up in the ratio between industrial, commercial, and residential before they start saying, well, you can only have this much. And I've said this to the, and the countryside mayors have said this over and over and over again to the province, but the bureaucrats don't get it, and the politicians ignore it. But unless they let us get beyond our 18 or 19% and get us up to 25 to 30%, we're never going to catch up. And as we have all the density coming in, it's going to cost us more money. So we're going to end up in a bigger fix if they don't straighten these things out. But they don't. I don't know why they don't seem to get it. Anyway, I have another speaker, Councillor Thompson.
Yeah, I was kind of saving what you were just saving for our last RB report, but what I was going to ask you is, we break the houses up in towns, semis, and detached homes as prorated on DCs. I'm wondering if that's as the, what Councillor Paddock was saying on rural lots. People building a $1 million home, they can afford it. So what about the ones that are building that 1,800 square foot home? You know, I'm just saying, is there a way, can we look at a, is there a possibility we could look at a threshold on the values of homes as how we prorate the DC charge, especially for the rural lots and other areas as well? I mean, I'm just wondering if that's a, is that a possibility? We can't do it today, I get it, but as we keep re-looking at it, is that something we can consider?
Mr. Wong?
Through you, Madam Mayor, the town is updating its DC bylaw, and that's one of the things I can look at or ask our consultants to consider. One of the difficulties I would see in that would be that we're looking at the cost of infrastructure, paying for the cost of infrastructure, so any reductions that we provide would mean that the town would probably pick up more of the growth-related infrastructure, but it is something that I can take back as part of the DC background study.
Well, it's just like, I mean, I'm looking at the rural lots where you've seen these double houses with double garages. We should be able to pick up on that versus the average, you know, decent home that's built or a bungalow that someone's built for retirees. All I'm just saying is I think we need to take a look at on how we can prorate that to capture. I don't think we can lose. I don't think we have to lose anything. I think we just have to rethink on how we're doing it, and just drive through the community and we're starting to see these duplexes, and we need to capitalize on that versus the, you know, home that's been built sensibly is getting it right through the nose. So I just think that's something we need to look at.
Okay, a recorded vote has been requested. So all those in favor, please stand.
Thank you, Your Worship. I see that a recorded vote was called, and I see that all members of council who are in attendance are in favor, so the motion is carried.
Okay. It's carried. Thank you. Okay, we'll go on to, do you want to keep going, council, or do you want to break for lunch? Break for lunch? Okay, lunch. We're going to have a, into reconvene council, and we're going to go to RB5. Okay. I have a motion moved by Councillor Whitehead, seconded by Councillor Foley, that report CS 2014-017 regarding a proposed license agreement between the Town of Caledon and Caledon Community Services, CCS, be received, that the Mayor and Clerk be authorized to execute a license agreement between the Caledon Community Services and the Corporation of the Town of Caledon to allow Caledon Community Services to park 8 coaches and the personal motor vehicles of its employees within the designated area of Yard 3, located at 14420 Highway 50 Bolton, in accordance with the terms within staff report CS 2014-017. Any questions? All those in favor? It's carried. Okay. Okay, we'll move on to RB7, moved by Councillor Paddock, seconded by Councillor Beffert. That report DP 2014-003 regarding recommendation for heritage designation of former Caledon Ski Cabin, 16590 here Ontario Street, be received, and that council direct. I'm going to ring the bell in a minute. And that, yes, I might ring his bell too. That council direct the Heritage Resource Office to proceed with the notice of intention to designate for the former Caledon Ski Cabin, 16590 here Ontario Street, and that should no objections be received during the mandatory 30-day public objection period following publication of the notice of intention to designate, council enact a bylaw for the purpose of designating the former Caledon Ski Cabin at 16590 here Ontario Street pursuant to the Ontario Heritage Act, and that once council enacts the designating bylaw, the mayor and clerk be authorized to execute a heritage easement agreement for this property. Are there any questions? I guess I should look at that, shouldn't I? I did have one. I wanted to know what a meteor is. Like, I know what a meteor is, but in when, oh gosh, what page is it? It's a picture, and of the, on RB 7.27, and it says main room fireplace containing a meteor. What's it? Is this some kind of a heritage thing?
It was apparently a rock that did have a meteor.
Oh, it was
embedded.
A real
so,
meteor.
Yes, a fossilized rock, and it's unfortunately been embedded within the chimney. It was supposed to have been built facing out, but nobody can see it, so they assume it was placed the wrong way around.
Okay, that's good. Okay, all those in favor of the motion? It's carried. There's nobody there. Okay. Thank you. Okay, RB8. Moved by Councillor Paderak, seconded by Councillor Beffert, that report DP 2014-005 regarding declare surplus and convey blocks 13 to 16, plan 43M-1009 to Arlington Homes and lift part of reserve block 20, 43M-1009, Ward 1, be received. And that council enact a bylaw declaring surplus those lands described as blocks 13 to 16 on plan 43M-1009. Attachment 1, and that council enact a bylaw lifting the 0.3-meter reserve that is described as Block 20, Plan 43M-1009, shown as Part 1 on Reference Plan 43R-30188, Attachment 2, and that council authorize the transfer of Blocks 13 to 16 on Plan 43M-1009 to Arlington Homes and further authorizes the mayor and clerk to execute all necessary documents required for the transfer of lands to Arlington Homes. Are there any questions? All those in favor? It's carried. Okay, we'll go on to RB9. Moved by Councillor Beffert, seconded by Councillor Foley. That report DP 2014-006 regarding the declaration of part of Lot 3, Concession 6, Albion, to be surplus, temporary turning circle on Simpson Road, and conveying it to the abutting landowner be received. And that council enacts a bylaw declaring surplus those lands described as being part of Lot 3, Concession 6, Albion, designated as part 29 on reference plan 43R-22219, attachment 1, and that council authorizes the transfer of part of lot 3, concession 6, Albion, designated as part 29 on reference plan 43R-22219, to the abutting landowner and further authorizes the mayor and clerk to execute all necessary documents required for the transfer of land to the abutting landowner. Are there any questions? Oh, my God. Okay, Councillor DeBoer.
How come the other half of that circle wouldn't just be conveyed through this one?
Hello, the other half was actually conveyed. I think it was conveyed last year.
Oh, okay.
On the other side of the road?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, why wouldn't they be both done at the same time? Is it because it has to be requested?
Yeah, normally we wait for the abutting landowner to request it or the developer to request it. We're not always aware of what temporary circles are still outstanding. Some in the more recent subdivisions we do, and we do them as the new subdivision is to the adjoining subdivision is registered, we'll do it. And then other times we're just still doing follow-ups.
Okay, is it unrealistic to do them as we went? Like the road went through, we know it's the turning circles, let's just get rid of them?
It depends, because sometimes the developer may not want it back when it's, if they're still owning it at that time. If they already have a transferor, a purchaser, then they might want to do it at the same time. We leave it kind of up to the landowner when they want it, when they don't want it.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, I don't have anyone else on my request to speak thing. I do have a question. Is this part of Simpson Road that we are planning on extending. I couldn't quite figure out where it is. Okay. Okay. So we are going to, this is part of the study part that we are extending. Right?
There's two gaps in some sense.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So this is above.
Okay. 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 All those in favor? It's carried. Okay, we'll go to RB 10. Moved by Councillor Whitehead, seconded by Councillor DeBoer, that report DP 2014-007 regarding provincial consultation on the land use planning and appeals system be received, and that the province be requested to delink employment lands from residential lands in greenfield density calculation, and that the province be requested to amend the Planning Act that an official plan amendment aimed at achieving conformity with provincial policies and plans, once approved, will not be subject to an appeal to the OMB, and that the province be further requested to consider the following in updating the land use planning and appeal system. A, appeals of an entire official plan should not be permitted. B, implement a timeline limit for the appeal of a non-decision by a municipal council. C, employment lands in strategic locations in the vicinity of major transportation infrastructure should be identified and protected in local municipal official plans beyond the 20-year time frame to provide a high degree of certainty that such lands will be available for employment uses in the long term. D, local municipalities should have the authority to protect their social, environmental, and financial interests. E, local municipalities should play a role in the approval of extraction operations, the amendment of their site plan, and the approval of rehabilitation plans. And F, intensive recreational uses such as a golf course, with the exception of structures such as the clubhouse, should not be considered as sensitive intensive recreational uses and subject to the minimum distance separation formula. That report DP 2014-007 be forwarded to the Ministry of Municipal Affairs and Housing as the town's comments on the land use planning and appeals system, and that copies of report DP 2014-007 be forwarded to the Region Appeal, the City of Mississauga, and the City of Brampton for their information. Okay. Councillor Thompson.
We had these guys approach us at the Roma board just to say what was going on, and they were saying, and
what
I gotta say,
can I ask what guys?
For me,
you said we have these guys approach us, and I'm saying what guys?
Oh, okay. The province.
Okay.
The consultants that have been working on this,
okay,
or the provincial consultants.
Okay, that's all
that are
we
working
need to
on
know.
This proposal. Yep. And I gotta say, first of all, the staff needs to be congratulated. I think you really nailed everything. But one thing that caught my attention listening to what the provincial guys were saying is they're looking at the appeal. They said we're not out to fix everybody's little problem. What they're looking at is the municipalities are being inundated to huge costs, and that's what they're out to do, is try to save the money for the municipalities. And I'm just saying the delinking is costing us huge dollars, and I'm just wondering if we need to send a backup addendum on that, just saying, because of the delink, you know, but not having the delinking, it's costing us a huge draw on our tax base, and I'm just wondering, is that something that we can add into this, or just have as our background if they ask for more detail?
Would you like to try and answer that, Hai Ching? Please.
Through you, Madam Mayor. The delinking indeed is a bigger problem, and particularly once the City of Mississauga and the City of Brampton's greenfield land diminishes and the new greenfield development all moves over to the town of Caledon. And because of our traditional low density of employment, which is very important for our economy, but it just happens to be lower density, and it penalizes our residential development in the new greenfield area is clearly not fair. And I think through a lot of discussions we have had with province and peer region staff, and this issue is being more received than before, particularly by provincial staff. And we are hopeful that in the 10-year review of the Greenbelt Plan, which is due to happen in 2 years' time, the province would consider this issue more seriously.
See, where I'm coming, and Hai-Ching, you explained it very well, and as what Mayor Morrison had said earlier today, and I totally agree with, we'll never make that 70-30 ratio with the because we're linked. And if we could get it delinked, we'll be able to grow our employment base because we're caught on that population numbers and low density, especially as you mentioned quite correctly, even in the manufacturing is all robotic, which reduces the significant numbers of employment, is a real challenge for us. So we're not getting the land yield we need. The land yield that we even have for 2031, could, you know, if there's all of a sudden a boom, the land's gone. We have no more land available. Economic development's made that abundantly clear to us. So that's why the delinking is very important, and it's very costly to the municipality as long as we're linked versus being delinked. And that's what I was just trying to say, that we do. I think we just need to have our studies done on what the cost is, the cost differential between being linked and delinked as far as being a viable municipality.
Madam Mayor, staff agree entirely with what Councillor Thompson said. The only concern I would have to raise for council information is that Greenfield density calculation is for region-wide calculation. It's not only for one particular lower-tier municipality. And the province tend to assume that within a region, there are ways to address it. And particularly by increasing greenfield density in one municipality, which would allow a more reasonable density in another. Unfortunately, this is not happening within Peel region.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're that anomaly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Councillor Patterak. Can you put your mic on, please?
Sorry, yeah, lights are confusing me.
How long have you been
old
sitting
dogs
at this
and
table?
New tricks. No, what? That's what we got here.
It's got to be 18 years.
In terms of this report, once again, we have a report, which I guess the comments were due on January 10th, so they've already been sent?
The deadline for January 10th was set by the province about 2 months ago, and the staff had notified provincial staff that our council meeting will be on the 14th of January. And they are aware of that our comments would be going after this council meeting.
Okay. I have two concerns with the report. They're minor, or one of them is minor. It's a terminology issue. We, in terms of MDS and golf courses, we continually call it a intensive recreational use. I would prefer that we call it an intensive recreational development. The use is not intensive when you have maximum of 12 people walking by a spot within an hour. It's not like you've got hordes and hordes of people. The development, I agree, is intensive because you change the landform, you add ponds, you add greens, you add a whole underground irrigation system. So that is an intensive invasion of what was previously, in most cases, farmland.
Okay, Mrs. Hall would like to speak to this.
I just wanted to qualify. The reason why that terminology is being used is because that is how it is defined in the MDS guidelines, Councillor Patterak.
Okay, can we include footnotes that we would like it to be changed so that it reflects reality more than an intensive recreational use? I mean, an intensive recreational use would be, I don't know what, you'd have a something with many more people in the same location at the same time, and you don't. We don't have spectators out there, rarely ever spectators. It's not a spectator sport as practiced on private golf courses, and it's very pastoral, actually. I just make that point. The other point I would like to make was I think we have an opportunity here in terms of the greenfield density requirements to raise the issue that, and we can continue to raise the issue in the plan review, but there was a mistake made by the growth plan, including the green belt within the within the growth plan. Right now, our part of the green belt is included. The entire town is in the growth plan. That means that if we want to have a minor rounding out in a village, it should comply to the density, or we have to trade off with another part of the region. And as Mr. Hsu just said, this is not happening. My problem is that the Greenbelt plan says that we should have development which is compatible with the existing land use patterns. High-intensity development, in the case of Alton, if we end up do having the rounding out, to have low density throughout that village, and then all of a sudden, right on the very edge of the village, not downtown, but on the edge of the village, to have an intensive development where you don't have any transit or any potential for transit. It just does not make sense. And if we don't raise it this time during the plan review, I certainly want us to raise the fact that we believe that the Greenbelt should not be included in the growth plan. It was an error. Here we have two different ministries, one lumping itself on top of another other ministry without any regard to the plan that was already there. So could you note that so that we can raise that in the future?
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Councillor Mazzapelli.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. A couple questions on this. First, I heard your comment, Hai Ching, that we advised the province that our comments would come subsequent to this meeting and also subsequent to the deadline. Did they give us assurances that our recommendations, our suggestions, would be taken in as part of the process? Are we given those assurances?
No, but the issue was raised repeatedly with the province. One was through the training workshop I raised verbally, and also there were other municipalities raising the same issue. And confirmation was not given in writing, but understanding was provided in those training sessions that they understand. Some of the municipal councils will not be having meeting exactly on the 10th or before the 10th. And given that they're saying that there are 444 municipalities in Ontario participating in these reviews, they will be receiving hundreds of these kind of comments. And time-wise, it can be accommodated.
Okay, because for myself, I would be much more comfortable with an assurance from the province that they will be accepted rather than an understanding that, you know, it was understood that it would be accepted. To me, there's a profound difference.
Assurance was given verbally through the training sessions.
Okay, yeah. All right. The second question I had was, if through the process of reviewing these recommendations and making any changes to land use planning, for example, if they are to delink employment and residential, will that have any impact on our current planning, say Mayfield West or the Bolton Residential Expansion Study, which are using that as a tool to direct our planning and giving us the densities that we have? Will that have any opportunity to affect planning that's already in place, or will it be subsequent planning exercises that any changes would take effect?
Through you, Madam Mayor, I don't think staff can respond to Councillor's question for now. Typically, a retroactive application of these kind of policy is something we have not heard of in the past. It is very difficult to tell at this point, but what we will be doing is that there will be other rounds of review. For example, the upcoming 10-year review of the growth plan. That is a major review that we will surely raise these issues with provincial staff and regional staff, and we will seek some technical clarifications on that as to whether or not a delinking will result in the residential density being at exactly 50 residents per hectare or not is some issues that we don't know at this point.
Okay, so that will be known at some point in the future.
That's right, and we will have more opportunities to comment on this particular issue.
Okay. The last comment I have, Madam Mayor, is, and I do support this document. I support the recommendations in it. They are well-founded. One thing I have spoken about numerous times, and I will do it again, is when I read bullet D, which, again, I fully support, local municipalities should have the authority to protect their social, environmental, and financial interests. In a community like Caledon, facing the pressures, as you just mentioned, and our Peel Plain, where we don't make mention, this is an opportunity for us to let the province know our feelings and our priorities. And for me to see agriculture missing there. Now, I know agriculture is obviously protected where it's protected under provincial legislation. But the White Belt, which is, as I'm told, the majority of our agricultural lands in Caledon, a high proportion of our highest class of agriculture in Caledon, at a time when the province speaks very strongly about protecting agriculture and promoting local agriculture, to me, the two conflict. When you talk about the development spilling over into Caledon and eating up the green belt, at a time where the province is suggesting to preserve lands for agriculture and local agricultural production, I would have hoped that we would have put a mention in here to give the local municipality the authority, even though it's not protected under provincial policy, that these are agricultural lands, and if our vision for these lands is to maintain at least a portion of them agriculturally, I would like the province to know that that should be the town of Caledon's right to direct those lands for those purposes. And so its omission here, I find somewhat concerning. So I don't know if there's a way.
The provincial policy
You know, we can't.
I know. I'm just trying to help.
Well, don't. Okay.
I don't know if there's a way to insert it. I know I am just one voice, and I don't speak for the town. But
so you, Madam Mayor, the provincial policy, the PPS, has a very stringent policies regarding protecting agriculture, and also the town's official plan has very detailed policies in this regard. And the reason we're putting only these bigger categories like a social, environmental, economic, is typically we are seeing that agriculture has value in all these categories. Agriculture has environmental value. Agriculture has a social value, because we have heard a lot of farmers in this area have been farming in this area for generations, and there surely are social value, and of course there are long-term economic implications as well. So typically when we comment on these issues, we typically use these three categories, in social, economic, and environmental, to cover them all. And if we were to get into the level of details like agriculture and the other areas, we will have to mention. And then it's getting really too big. And I hope this is understandable to our council.
Well, you know, with all due respect, and I will finish up, Madam Mayor, its omission almost leads me to believe that we have very strong language protecting agriculture where it's already protected by provincial legislation. Where it's not, i.e. the White Belt, to me there's a void here. And if you want to talk about, you know, a smaller issue, we've chosen to, and I support it, identifying golf courses. I think agriculture in the Peel Plain is a larger issue than golf courses, and therefore, in my opinion, worthy of mention. Respectfully, I just submit that, that's just my personal feeling. Thanks.
Thank you. Councillor Beffert?
Hi, Ching. I just want to commend you with regard to the mineral aggregate resources section. I note that you've talked about several key issues that we've talked about during several applications. The first one being the engagement of citizens. The whole issue of the balance that you talk about, and the issues of recycling and rehabilitation, and the whole area of environmental, social, and fiscal impacts. I think that's what we were talking about this morning when we were responding to Councillor Patterack's motion. And I think by putting it in here and asking for some review of that process is a really good thing. So my comments are to say thank you for doing that.
Councillor Foley.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Thank you. It's an excellent report. I wonder if it's possible, and certainly not on the spot, but to put a total dollar value to the amount of time, resources, and money that have been spent trying to ensure that our official plan reflects the growth plan. Because I think if we could, that would be a really good...
Through you, Madam Mayor. Actually, staff has been working on it, and because of this last invoice process, we are receiving invoices from our consultants, and we try to come up and working in, together with our finance staff, the total cost of the hearing through OPA 226. And initially, we planned a big amount, but really, we didn't use much of it. Mm-hmm. But we still wanted to come up with some kind of a number to report to council.
Okay. Mrs. Hall, you wanted to speak to this?
Just to clarify Hai Ching's comments, those are only based on comments on consultants and lawyers from the outside. We do not have any numbers to provide to you as to the resource time that it took staff to do all the work that was done in-house, because we don't actually track the time. So we wouldn't, it would just be an estimate. I wouldn't actually be able to give you any true values.
I'm thinking it would be a pretty big number.
I would.
Because, I mean, if you could come up with that number, I think it would go a long way to making the case about not allowing appeals of entire official plans once all that work's been done and money has been spent. I think, you know, with the growth plan, we've been faced with unrealistic density targets. We've been forced to plan by numbers. It does not show regard for quality of life. I think it just shows that there's a disconnect between what the province planned with the growth plan and what is real life. I'm really impressed with the effort that went into this report. Thank you very much. I really hope it sparks some change.
Okay. Mr. Barnes.
Thank you, Mayor Morrison. I had one comment that I wanted to make that hasn't been addressed here, but I did see some additional documents, and I started thinking about it on the weekend. And that is, this is just another case. The Ontario Municipal Board is just another case of over-regulation and under-resourcing by the province. And it's very much like you can't get an inspector from M&R for a gravel pit, and you can't get an OMB hearing for any kind of land use plan appeal. So if you actually go to this document in here, it says you get 180 days for this and 180 days and that to actually create the need for or allow an appeal. And then there is absolutely no time frame for anybody to deal with the appeal. And, you know, one of the things we don't have in here, but certainly either get the OMB out of some of their activities or put a time limit on when they have to hear it and put the resources in place for it.
Yeah. No, I think we agree with you. I just want to say that I also wrote on mine that it was an excellent report, was well thought out. I thought it was forward thinking on behalf of the municipality and taking us in the right direction. So thank you very much.
Madam Mayor, sorry.
Yes.
In regards to...
You don't have a little button.
I don't have a little button, sorry. So I still have to do that. I thought I wasn't going to have to do that anymore. In regards to Mr. Barnes' comments, I think it's a valid comment that maybe should be put into the notice of motion here tonight, today.
Okay.
If you, council is willing to do that.
Okay. Okay. So we need an actual amendment. Councillor Thompson said he would move it, seconded by Councillor DeBoer, that we are going to say that the OMB needs to be resourced properly.
Either take them out of some of their business or resource them
properly. Yeah, either. So we'll massage that, but that's the bottom line. It's they either get out of some of the businesses or else they get resourced properly. Okay.
The other thing I heard from Mr. Barnes was, though, that there should be a time frame associated with appeals. And I thought that was a very important point, because we do have, in some matters, because how busy the board is that sometimes it takes up to 6 months to a year before we're actually before them dealing with things, and time moves on.
Okay.
But we have to do everything within a certain time frame.
Right. Okay, so that will be in that motion also. So dealing with that amendment, Councillor Patterak, is that to the amendment? You need to put your mic on, please.
Chime in on this, the delays. Not only is there the problem of, you know, right now it's about 2 months to get your pre-hearing, and then you get your date. Well, that's fine. You have your five-day hearing, and in the case of Barry Livingston, NEC appeal, but it's the same deal. They got their 2.5-day hearing. The hearing officer quietly tells the appellant, if you don't hear from me in 3 months, it's probably a positive report. But now it's 6 months. It can be 8 months. It could be 9 months. Their writing schedule can be way behind their hearing schedule. And that is holding people up just as much as waiting for the hearing. In some ways, it's more nerve-wracking. So we have to address that it has to be resourced so that not only can you have a hearing, but that you can have the hearing officer, while the information is fresh, not to go back to the notes, while it's fresh and you have the notes, that you can write a cohesive, cogent report, which they do in most cases, but I don't think it's helpful for them to have to wait 6 months before they have time to actually write the bloody thing. And these aren't easy things to write. They do take time.
Okay. So to the amendment, and that's the under-resourcing by the province of the OMB and time frame associated with appeals. All those in favor of the amendment? It's carried. And with regards to the... I've got to clear you out there. And with regards to the motion as amended, recorded vote, all those in favor, please stand.
Thank you, Your Worship. Recorded vote was called, and I see that everyone in attendance is in favor of the motion as amended.
Okay. So it carries. Thank you. Okay, we are going to move on to, do I have any motion? Okay. Thank you. Okay, we'll move on to the minutes. I have a motion moved by Councillor Whitehead, seconded by Councillor DeBoer, that the minutes of the following meetings be adopted as written and distributed, as printed, and that the minutes of the following meetings be received as written and distributed, which is Committee of Adjustment, 21st of August and September 18th. All those in favor? It's carried. Okay. There's no proclamations. Correspondence. I have a motion moved by Councillor Beffert, seconded by Councillor Foley, that the correspondence items as listed in the correspondence package for the January 14th, 2014 Council meeting be received. All those in favor? It's carried. I'm going to go back to Council inquiries because I didn't do that. And I'll start with Councillor Beffert.
Yes, Madam Mayor, very quickly, I just want to confirm that at the next council meeting, there will be a report that will probably give some parameters to the cleanup for the storm for people as to exactly what they can and cannot do. Is that correct?
It should be on the 21st.
Yes, we will have a report on the 21st.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Councillor DeBoer.
Conversations with Doug Osborne, I guess the region is still looking for a location here in Caledon East for an ambulance hall. And one of the locations on the last set of drawings that I saw at Christmas time or over the course of Christmas was a location in front of the front door of the arena next door, in front of the community center. I don't know if there's some way to Because I think we're going to end up with too much stuff, too many things on this campus. If we have an ambulance hall essentially at the entrance beside or across from the building that's now used by law enforcement, building standards, or building and bylaw, or the old fire, the old police station,
yep.
We're going to end up having 25 or 30 parking spots less essentially at the front door of what's going to be the major recreation center. If you were there last night, the parking lot was quite full except for the piece at the back.
It's supposed to be inquiries by council.
So my inquiry is whether regional staff or regional councillors can kind of get a handle on what's being proposed, and to maybe try and come up with a solution that actually works. A question through conversation and a suggestion would be is that can you suggest to the region that there's two houses across the road, you could probably buy them and make them look like part of the development and run the ambulances in there and then have a crew room or something above them. I think there's got to be a better solution. So my question is, can I have the regional members of regional council inquire about what this is and try and come up with something that actually works for the campus?
Yes, of course you can. I mean, in my opinion, if council does not want another facility built on this campus because you feel it's too crowded or it will be too crowded and not enough parking, then we need to say that, and the region will have to look elsewhere.
Well, we're looking at the community growing and parking's going to be required, and we got soccer fields that were built out. We're going to be looking at location. We've actually bought a site for more soccer fields, and we're going to have to put parking lots there. So now we're giving up a parking area, so the region can put up an ambulance hall, and yet we're going to end up buying more land or essentially developing more land for parking spaces for a soccer field. It just seems like there could be a different solution, and then if the ambulance is really working, it goes out in the morning and comes back a shift change in the afternoon if it's really out. So
I would say that that's something that would come before this council before it would ever be allowed anyway.
Well, it might, but I just wouldn't want it the region to invest a whole lot of time and energy in a location that makes little to no sense.
Okay.
They've looked at two or three locations here along Old Church Road.
You know more than the regional councillors. I thought they were looking at where the
portable fire
used to be, and expanding the fire hall. That
was the one site, and then they didn't like that because they couldn't drive through the building. They wanted to drive around. So now they're looking at a location here next door or in the parking lot next door because they can drive through. I think you got to buy a backup camera for the let them back up into the spot. There's got to be a better solution, and I think
Barnes wants to speak to it.
Thank you, Mayor Morrison. We can we're still having an ongoing discussion with emergency services at the region, or the paramedic services in terms of our campus plan, so we can raise that issue with them there as well.
Okay, Councillor Thompson. I mean, this is council inquiries. This isn't for a big discussion. So if you want to say something maybe under council inquiries, that would be fine. Okay. Okay. Councillor Foley.
Yes, thank you. Also next week, I wondered if perhaps we could get an update on snow clearing, snow removal, the sidewalks, that sort of thing. Who's doing what the estimated time frames are to finish, what streets have been done and what are still waiting, that sort of thing. Also, last fall, we heard about the OPP. We're going to get a device for the vehicles for a limited time frame. It was called an automated license plate recognition system to try out, and I'm just wondering if they got that and how they worked out and if it was something worth looking at for a permanent basis. I think it was to recognize plates immediately if they were stolen or I don't remember hearing back.
Mr. Barnes?
Through you, Mayor Morrison. The OPP already has that. Yeah. They have, and they've been using it.
Okay. Councillor Whitehead?
I don't have anything, but just a point of clarification. I thought we had gone through the discussion of the ambulance hall beyond what Councillor DeBoer is saying, and it actually, in our workshop, thought the better location was at the entrance, main entrance to the municipal campus, not over by the arena, that we, because they could have a drive-through building that was right at the entrance where the traffic light was going to be. So I just a bit of clarification. I wouldn't be that anxious for us to suddenly say to the region, we don't want you on the site. I thought that we did discuss where probably the best location would be on the site, and it wasn't the one that was mentioned. It was actually the reorganized main entrance where the traffic signal would be.
Through you, Mayor Morrison. Councillor Whitehead, the discussion that we had at workshop, I believe, was that we would look at the corner on the east side of the entrance into the CCC. Is that the same as what you're saying?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that in fact, is what is in the draft campus plan right now.
Yeah, okay.
But we've had no confirmation from parametric services at the region or from the land group at the region that that's acceptable to them.
My only concern is that we not suddenly change our position if our position is evolving, that we'd better have a discussion here before we actually say to the region, this is a non-working model.
Hmm? Oh, Mr. Kaufman.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Excuse me. Just to add to Mr. Barnes' comments, at the workshop, the ambulance station, I think as Councillor DeBoer had indicated, was being looked at where the old fire portable was beside the fire station. It was determined that time council wasn't in favor of that location because we can't attach it to the fire station and it took up too much space with that parking lot. So what came out of that workshop was a bit of a consensus that it looked like the location would be the east to the east of the existing 6211, the old police station. And that was the one that we approached the region about. Mr. Barnes is absolutely correct. And we did receive confirmation within the last little while that they are interested in that location. And I believe it was that determination and working with Councillor DeBoer on various things about, because he was mainly concerned about what are we doing with the old fire portable, are there various situations that we could take advantage of. That's why he was kept in the loop on a couple of these things. So he did see that the region had agreed to looking at that corner in the entrance to the CCC east of the existing 6211 building. Now, we thought that at the councillor workshop that there was some consensus that that would be a preferable location. It was never determined that we didn't see any consensus about looking at the main entrance because that was going to be a very busy entrance. And we didn't want to complicate that with emergency vehicles coming out.
Well, no decisions can be made at a workshop.
Absolutely.
So there
absolutely
can be ideas passed around, but there would be no consensus as such,
well,
because workshops are, excuse my expression, useless almost, because you're not allowed to do anything.
Yes, maybe I used the wrong word, Madam Mayor, about consensus, but
okay.
We did approach the region about some alternative locations, and they have looked at the one that we're talking about right now.
Okay, and when Councillor DeBoer was talking about it, it sounded to me like it was on the front of, when you said that, I'm thinking on the front of our facilities that are there, not out at the road in front, but okay. Okay. Councillor Thompson?
Well, my understanding from Peter Dundas is he's waiting to hear back from what the consultants, you know, what it was going to look like. So that's where I understand it. But I still say that, in my opinion, I still think where the old portables were is where it could sit. Because I'll tell you, the ambulance traffic would be no worse than what it was when the fire had it there. But I realize, but I do know, I've had some conversations with Ron before, and we spoke at Valleywood Fire Hall opening with Peter Dundas, but he's waiting to hear back from what.
Do you have an inquiry?
Yeah, absolutely. And where I'm going is basically, I'm dumping it back onto Ron, unfortunately, through you, Madam Mayor, if it's okay. That is it, you know, my understanding, and if he can clarify, that we're waiting for the report to come back on the campus and what it's going to look like. And I think that's what ambulance is waiting for.
Mr. Kaufman?
That is correct. We had a request from the region to look at that location. We've distributed that around to staff for comments, and it would be brought back as part of the campus plan and a potential location, which council then would have to vote on and agree and say yay or nay.
And the council plan, I think, is coming to council next week, next council meeting. Is it not?
No, it's deferred to.
Oh, okay. Okay, I thought it was. Okay, it's coming in February now. Okay. An inquiry?
Yes, I do have one more inquiry. It started this morning. I haven't finished off with it. And it's about maybe having to dynamite the ice. We got caught the last time when Cheltenham flooded because we thought we had the resources that we don't. And I know it's CDC's responsibility in Eminar. But what I'm just saying is, can staff please take the leadership on this, because it's going to bite us. We're the ones going to end up holding the bag should we have a flood in any of our villages. And I'm just making sure that we have the resources in place. That's all I'm asking.
Okay. Councillor Mezzapelli?
Yes, Madam Mayor, thank you. Just one question for Mr. Loveridge with respect to, I know we're having a report coming to council as far as the cleanup, and which will include the ice and trees. But between now and then, I'm wondering if you're able to tell me what is happening as far as roads crews on treating the ice that is on the road. I know Councillor Foley and myself have received numerous calls about the condition of the roads, and we all understand why they are the way they are. But are the trucks going to be applying de-icing solutions, something like that, over the next period of time? Just something that we can offer back to residents between now and the next time we meet.
Mr. Leverage?
Through you, Madam Mayor. The last week's been a busy week for our crews, I think you've been aware. And so the priority over the weekend from Friday until Sunday was to deal with the ice or the freezing rain and the rain that we had on the weekend. So we also ran into a little bit of crew time issues, which we now are caught up as of yesterday, Monday. And I realize that some of the side roads are not as good a condition as they should be, and so the priority over this next week and two, is to get those roads back into shape. So we have been applying de-icing. We are going to continue to do that and try and get the roads back into condition.
Okay, so that work is underway.
Yeah, the priority for the weekend was to make sure that we dealt with the rain and the catch basins. We had a couple crews out doing catch basin work and all that.
So. Okay, thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Councillor Paderak? No, nothing. I have two people on the speaker's list. It drives our clerk crazy that we just go off into Never Never Land here.
I'm already crazy.
Oh, okay. Councillor Whitehead, I'm assuming it's a question.
No, I just can't resist telling you this whole story.
Oh, Lordy. That could be an hour.
Bolton had a rowboat and dynamite in order to deal with the mill pond. And when I was there as a kid, just before Hurricane Hazel, I can recall a couple of times, because municipally we didn't look after our equipment, and they tended to use the rowboat as a storage area because the town hall was really small. That a couple of times, by the time they got the rowboat out and got it in the pond, the damn rowboat sank twice that I saw. It was, you could have made a Max Sennett film out of the thing. So if we are going to get ready, we shouldn't get ready the way we were ready in Bolton in the early 50s.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, Councillor Beffert, I hope yours is as good.
I'm not sure it is. If I could just add on to Councillor Thompson's inquiry, could you also add through Public Works the Caledon Creek in Caledon Village off Snowbury? We have had severe flooding in that area in the past. We cleaned it up over the last couple of years, and it's been running smoothly. I just think, and the local, you know, public works guys know all about it, if we could just make sure it's clean before we end up with another flood over there, it would be great. Snowberry and Snowberry Court. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Public question period. Are there any members of the public who would like to come forward and ask a question? Okay. We're going to move on to bylaws. I have a motion moved by Councillor Whitehead, seconded by Councillor Beffert, that the following bylaws be read a first, second, and third time and finally passed. 2014-002, 003, 004, 005, 006, 007, and 008. All those in favor? It's carried. I need adjournment. Councillor Whitehead and Councillor Mezzapelli, all those in favor? Carried. Thank you very much.